Blog Talk Radio.
I can't remember anything that happened before 2 weeks ago.
Friday. It is October the 8th, 2013, and this is the last word.
November the 8th.
Oh, where am I? Am I losing my mind? I lost a month.
Too many holidays.
Too many tequila.
Tequila.
I opened up the $150 bottle.
Mexico.
We'll have a little bit of shot in a minute or so. We put some more, have some. People talking about, we're talking about that crazy
that's
mayor.
That's healthcare you can believe.
Hey, that's healthcare you can believe. I gave some, a little taste. I thought I had opened a bottle, but I didn't. So I gave a little bit to my lawnmower.
Oh.
He did my whole lawn in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I have a big lawn.
He might be mowing down the tree.
And the sides and the back. He blew every, I said, man. He said, I feel so great. Anyway. This is November the 8th, 2013, and I'm Michael Lawson with Thomas Fortenberry. And we got a load to talk about.
Hey, there's so much news.
And when you eliminate the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be true.
And if you're part of the staff of certain congresspeople, you might have not noted that that was a quote from?
From?
Sir, author Conan Doyle, the creator of Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, I thought Sherlock Holmes created author Conan Doyle. No? Oh, okay.
We'll have to talk about that later because that's one of my absolute pet peeves. I don't mind anybody having any kind of difference of opinion and thought and want to have a philosophical debate on, you know, all these political matters that are of import to our nation. But have your own thoughts, people. Please, have your own opinion. Quit stealing other people's.
You wouldn't be talking about
this person.
I'm against having a king. I think having a monarch is what we fought the American Revolution over, and someone who wants to bypass the Constitution, bypass Congress, that's someone who wants to act like a king or a monarch. I've been opposed to executive orders, even with Republican president, but one that wants to infringe on the Second Amendment, we will fight tooth and nail, and I promise you there'll be no rock left unturned as far as trying to stop him from usurping the Constitution.
I will find every single thing to copy, whatever. You mean to tell me? I thought that was a quote from Rand Paul.
Yeah, I thought that was him saying it.
Oh.
But apparently, Rand has a little problem.
Well,
a huge problem.
We have a call right here. Let's see who's on the air here. Hello, who's this?
This is Nicholas Steiner. How you doing, Mike?
Nicholas Steiner. I was just mentioning your name to my senior producer here, Thomas Berry.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Hello, Mr. Scott.
And,
hello,
well,
how are we doing today, gentlemen?
Thomas with me, and I'm telling you, how busy are you guys?
In my 9-year professional career in the healthcare industry, this is the single busiest I have ever been. And it's been a whirlwind, that's for sure. It's been a trying time over the last, 40 days now we've been into this healthcare reform. A lot of people need help. A lot of people have questions. We have been able to get some people through the marketplace, but most of those are still finding it quite frustrating to get through the process and get their questions answered.
Well, you know, I find that troubling, but yet good. But you guys helped me out before this even happened. I mean, my health insurance, I thought it was I pay, was had gone up $125 every year prior to every year for 40. And I said, this is completely ludicrous for a 27, 28, 30-year-old woman that has no physical ailment. It is just incredible. And then we got these CEOs making, $6 million and $10 million and $32 million because they're spending all the premium money and none of it on you. It's completely ludicrous. Now, you guys helped me out tremendously. As a matter of fact, I realized after we went through you guys going through what we needed and how we needed it and whatnot, a savings of about $200, almost $200 a month.
That's one thing that's also frustrating with this process is they're not mentioning the agents and the assistance and advice we're able to give out there in the industry. They're referring to these hotlines and these numbers to call in to where people have only been working there a couple of weeks. They've just gone through their recent training, and they really don't know the full spectrum of healthcare. And even in, on, or off the marketplace, there's still a lot of options out there that people have to get healthcare and still make it affordable.
Well, you know, what are some of the questions that you're getting that, you know, people looking now? And, just like you said, they're not even mentioning that they can go to people like you, people like coworkers, that they can find, that can look out for the person and find what they need without going to the exchange.
And that's correct. And the biggest questions that we're having now is, you know, what are we qualifying for as far as assistance that may be offered to us? What are the options of plans that we have? And, of course, the big one we're seeing in the news right now is, my current plan is going to be canceled by the end of the year. What can you provide me now? I'm not able to get into these websites to see what I can get. What are we able to do? And that's where we're letting them know, hold off. Hopefully we're able to get to you soon. Hopefully we'll have those answers. And just letting them know we're getting back to them.
Well, you know, now some of these insurance, you know, I can tell you about, now this is the one that I got through you for my oldest, my youngest daughter, and she's 30 years old.
Yeah.
And
yep.
I got an insurance. Now it comes out of my checking automatically every month. So when I got a letter from them in July, I just threw it on the computer table because I was so busy. I was sick. As a matter of fact, I've been sick. I had the sciatica attack. I was sick for about 6 months. I couldn't even walk. Anyway, what happened was that I didn't look at it. So a month later, I opened up the envelope. I was, matter of fact, about 15 minutes before I was going to go in the air. And I was shocked. And the first sentence says, because of the Affordable Care Act, I said, uh-oh, what is going to happen now? It said, we have to refund monies that we do not spend of your premium. And because of that, we are enclosing a $99.96 check.
Lo and behold, a little surprise.
I was shocked. And it said that we have already returned over $22,800,000+ in premiums that we haven't used for customers, and yours amounts to 3.1%. That's why I got the $99 back. So people don't realize that this is going to happen. And when they're and most people, you know, they go out and get insurance. We got the insurance, you know, and – you know, I'm very much because I work for the federal government, and we owed before I retired, and I now have, and we were always used to looking at 15 and 20 plans. We were always used to that because we always had an offer when we got open season, 15 and 20 plans, and we look through and we say which one is better, which one is better for this year, which one, and so I was familiar with looking at a lot of plans, but a lot of people aren't. Because when they work for a company, they might get one or two plans or three plans that they can look through, and they think, well, this is it. Don't realize that they don't have to take those plans. They can go someplace else. So, and the insurance companies notice. So when they jack up the price, they say, oh, what am I going to do? I'm just going to have to live with this or go without insurance. That is not the case. Am I right?
That's exactly correct. A lot of people don't look at that. They go with years without reevaluating that situation and come to find out most times are not. And examples like yours, they're able to save, you know, hundreds, sometimes even thousands when it's full families per year.
Absolutely. Now, and you and your coworkers can assist anybody in anywhere in the 50 states, right?
We're currently in 37 states right now, not in all 50.
And how would people go about getting a hold of you or finding out more information?
Yeah, the easiest way is to either reach us toll-free. That number is 866-966-9262. Or you're more than welcome to visit us online at preferredhealthonline.com. You'll also find that we do have a Better Business rating of an A there as well.
And how do you walk people through? What are some of the questions you ask the person? Because I'm sure a lot of times when people call into you, they really don't know what to ask for.
Well, the initial questions are, you know, how often are you going to the doctor? What type of assistance you may need? Whether you may or may not have a condition or medications that you could be taking. From there, in the new world of healthcare, it's coming down to a lot of people on what their monthly incomes are, whether they're going to qualify for subsidy assistance or they need to look outside the exchange and find the best options. That's where we're finding we're asking those questions more now in the new world versus the old insurance world, to where it was more based on the condition the person may have had.
Because now there's no preconditions, correct?
Correct, starting January 1st.
And now, and I remember that one of the major things that was done when the other gentleman who I first spoke to had me ask for a higher premium. And I said, a higher deductible, that is. I said, look, I don't want to go that high. That's not you. He said, no, I can get you an insurance that will cover your deductible. So people don't have to be afraid. And this is something they wouldn't ordinarily know to ask for. And he told me, look.
Unless, yeah, unless they were speaking with someone that knew all that and was able to show them how they're able to save. A lot of people even, too, when they're calling the companies directly, you know, to mention the big carriers out there, whether they speak with an agent or that company directly, rates are exactly the same. So if you call a company directly, they're probably going to push their products, their plans, and not tell you about other options you have to protect yourself. And that's the nice thing about speaking with an agent or broker out there is they can compare that for you, look at an option that might have a little bit higher deductible on it, but give you that supplemental or insurance protection to protect that deductible in an occurrence of a serious illness, you know, God forbid, or a major accident.
Right. And how does that work now with the getting that higher deductible? I know how it works, but I'd like you to explain it to the listening audience.
Yeah, with the deductibles, it's all going to be based on anything major medical that were to occur. Serious hospitalization, major illness or injuries. You're going to the hospital, you're going to use your deductible. What you find in most plans, when you go with a lower deductible, $500, $1,000, or $1,500, the costs far outvary the savings that you're having per year. For example, if you have a plan that's a $2,500 deductible for a single individual, that plan could be $200 a month. But if you were to look at that same plan with a little bit higher deductible, it could be $80 or $90 per month. Especially if someone's healthy, that could be a serious amount of savings in their budget.
Right, and then what they'll do is just buy another insurance plan that will take care of that. And it still would be less than what
correct.
They pay. Right. And
yeah.
And I notice right now because I know I think my my oldest daughter that I got involved with you, I think her no, I think it's her plan that she has right now. I think it was like $10,000 a deductible. I said that's completely lunacy. So she's going to be calling you, if not today, but how late are you there now? Because you're in San Diego, right?
Yep, San Diego, California, with all the things that have been going on, things have been pretty crazy. I'm working about 6 days a week, and I'm here from about 8 to 8 Eastern Standard Time.
Okay, and give us that number one more time.
866-966-9262.
And his extension, ladies and gentlemen, is 101. So if you want to speak to Nicholas personally, you can speak to him. Because I'm going to be calling him later after the show, and my oldest daughter is, and I'm sure my senior producer will be. So we will have – now, one last thing. How do you think this is going to work? Because even after January 1st, when it kicks in, or March 31st, I think, when the extension is going to be, and maybe it might be a little longer, you are still going to be inundated. I guess it's going to be even worse after January 1st with you guys.
Well, not only after January 1st, but you do have till March 31st to enroll for the plans without being penalized through the tax penalties.
Okay.
They're saying that they do expect to extend that probably a month or two. We haven't heard exactly yet on whether they are going to or not, but definitely keep your eye out to see posted on whether those changes. It's going to happen more next year in 2014 because it's only going to be a 60-day enrollment period from October through December. So that's very important to keep in mind as well.
And, you know, realistically, I don't think in this man's army, as you used to say, I don't think they will ever tax anybody if they're late. I think that is...
You know, I don't... You know, I'm gonna have to plead the fifth on that one.
But okay, Nicholas, I am glad you called in. People, you need to call up Preferred Health. He's at Extension 101, and you are welcome to call at any time and give us some updates. Matter of fact, I wish you would. I wish you would call in.
I'll be happy to do that.
At the end of the month and see what, because that's when most of the technical problems, and realistically, ladies and gentlemen, these are coding problems why this has not through. I mean, because all these insurance companies, every one of them has a different code that they enter. And
yep.
You're talking about 47 million people out of insurance thereabouts. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, Amazon has never seen anything like this, so they can't compare this to Amazon or Google.
It literally is a technical glitch
right.
rather than
right.
something wrong with the system.
Right.
So I have one question.
You have your question. Go ahead.
I have a question for you just to ask. Because this came up with several people that I've worked with and know. But what are the parameters on qualifications? Because a lot of the people I know that work are saying that when they have called or checked on the site, they're being told that they are ineligible for anything because they have to use their existing employer's health care and or because they make too much money.
That is correct. If you are being offered coverage through an employer, you would not qualify for a subsidy. And as far as the Medicaid levels, that's going to be 138% of poverty to qualify for that new expansion. And if you make too much money, a really good rule of thumb to think for an individual is if you're making over about $32,500, you're not going to see too much. And then if you're as a couple, over about $6,500, you're not going to see too much there either. Where we're seeing the really significant subsidy assistance is the range of those people that are making as an individual anywhere from about $15,000 to $25,000. That's taking care of most, if not all, the premium for a lot of those people.
I haven't had a guy that just got out of the hospital, very young guy, but surprisingly enough, he's having a really hard time. And he was very upset, and I told him, you know, hey, man, you need to jump on and see what you can do because he just has the, you know, minimal wage kind of job. But they told him because the job offered a health care, which he can't afford, that he wasn't eligible, and he was just all upset about that. So I was trying to see if I was doing something wrong or you know, see what the parameters there were. But, all right, I just wanted to make sure what the you know, entrance levels were.
Well, that brings up another problem before I go, Nicholas, as I got you here. If you are in a group plan, you can drop out of that group plan, correct, and get insurance anywhere you want.
After annual period, most employers will have a period or a time of year that you can choose to do that. And if you're at a period and time of year where you're not being offered because the open enrollment's not to you, then yes, you would be able to qualify at that time.
So if that's open enrollment.
No, outside.
Oh, outside.
Correct.
The outside. So open enrollment. So outside of open enrollment. So if open enrollment was, say, from October to December, you could do it, but you could do it in January or February, March.
Yeah, you would have to have the ability to enroll in that work plan at that period in time, yes.
So that should be. Can you say that one more time, Nicholas?
Yeah, it's at any point in time that you'd have access to enroll in that work plan. And a lot of these new plans, keep in mind, too, that you're going to be able to enroll in them throughout the year through an employer. So it's not going to be as restrictive as it is now. But if you have the action or the possibility to enroll in a plan through your employer, then you would not have the ability to take advantage of the subsidy and tax credit.
Okay, but besides the subsidy and tax credit, suppose you just wanted to get another insurance. And it was
yeah,
over
you can change that. Not a problem.
You can change. Yeah, that's at any time,
yes.
Correct? Okay,
yeah.
So you can drop
correct.
your employer's plan and go to another plan if you want.
Correct.
Okay, good. Okay, very good. I thank you, Nicholas. And Preferred Healthcare, give us the number one more time.
866-966-9262. And if you want to reach me directly, it's extension 101. But our whole staff has been doing it a long time, and they're all really good.
I appreciate it. And at the end of this month, I'd like you to come back on because we're supposed to be at that portion where everything seems to be up and running. I think they're doing about 17,000 enrollees a day now. So we'll see. I'd love to talk to you again.
All right,
thank you.
Thank you very much. You guys, gentlemen, have a great day.
We will be calling you, so look out for the call sometime after the show tonight.
Okay.
The Lifeline,
right.
4 o'clock or something. All right. Bye-bye.
Okay.
And that was Nicholas from Preferred Healthcare.
Well, you know,
got some good stuff.
Welcome to get just information because there's been so much disinformation.
Of course.
Everybody's scared and everybody doesn't understand.
Right.
And I think that, unfortunately, the IT debacle they had on the rollout really
right.
didn't help. But it's all getting fixed now. They said that they've got the, I saw just the other day, the load times on the pages, which used to be very slow and bogging down.
Right.
They're down to a few nanoseconds now. They're anything on the site loads in less than a second. So it is moving along. They are fixing all the bugs, and I think by the end of this month it'll be a hyper-fast site.
We have a gentleman coming on the phone right now. But... theme song up to time. But who do we have is if I didn't know. Hello, who's this?
Hey, Michael, this is presidential candidate Robbie Wales.
Yes, Robbie, I couldn't get your theme song up in time, but one of my favorite theme songs, theme from The Godfather, I had to play since I didn't have you.
Well, and I can appreciate The Godfather, so it's nice to be on with you again today, Michael.
And I you were on when we were talking to the gentleman from Preferred Healthcare.
I did. I heard a little bit of conversation.
Yeah, and I went to him about a year ago. Well, his company about a year ago. Because my daughter's insurance was being jacked up every year for 4 years, and it went from like $175 to $407. So that was before healthcare came in. So these guys are lying when they said it's Obamacare that's doing it. Baloney, it's you jaguar crackhead CEOs that are doing it. I mean, you know, these people...
It's been going up every year for decades.
Yeah, of course. And
that's why they have, the...
That's right. And this is what made this part of the problem. And I went to the Preferred Healthcare, and I went from 407 down to 297 with a $2,500 deductible. So and part of that is I got the health insurance for $226 and got another $42 that will pay for my deductible in case of any catastrophic, not my deductible, my daughter's deductible, in case of any long-term health care debacle. So these people are lying out there when they say that, you know, and this is before health care, before the Affordable Care Act. So I'm going back to him this afternoon when we get up here to see what health I can get, how I can change my daughter's health care. And both daughters, matter of fact, have health care with the first. So if they are a broker, they will do the research for us. And they will make sure you get the best available product on the market.
Well, here's one thing.
Yeah, good.
We're going to dive into Economics.
Economics.
Two means takes four.
That's right.
So, speaking of, you will be coming in as president of 2016, and you will be there. That's Obamacare. So, if this is the law of the land, and you're there or not, is it fine? Is it part of the plan? Are you going to work with it? Are you going to undercut it? Are you going to... What
would you do with the health care? Once
you have a whole different plan, Bobby? Yeah, you were breaking up a little bit there, Michael. I can hear you now.
Okay. Thomas had a question for you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'm having a tough time hearing him. I can hear you very well.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Well,
could you hear Thomas or me very well? Who you hear very well? Thomas or me?
Well, I was hearing Michael very well. Then all of a sudden, I heard Thomas just then.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead, Thomas.
Well, we'll try it again. So I was just saying, to tie it in with your bid for presidency and Eagleonomics, which we talked about some last week. I was just asking about you will be inheriting, you know, Obamacare if you go in 2016. So do you think it's fairly viable? Do you think it needs reform? Do you think it needs to be thrown out? How does that fit in with Eagleonomics and you know, helping average Americans get affordable health care?
Well, Thomas, that's a great question. I would like to see every American have affordable health care. And, you know, I'm glad that this law has gone through. I do believe there's some tweaks that need to be worked on as far as this law is concerned, but that's any law. Now that we've got it there, let's just start working with it and make it actually work. Just because there's a problem here or there doesn't mean you throw something out like the Republicans and the GOP is wanting to do. We just need to fix a few of the problems. And of course, the main problem right now is that the website is having all sorts of issues. But, you know, I venture to say that probably most of those issues are simply because there are so many people out here that are trying to get health care because now all of a sudden they're giving them this opportunity that there's so many people going on at one time it's actually made the system crash. And of course, we've heard the coding problems and so forth. But, you know, it just proves to me that, you know, there's definitely a demand.
Yeah. I mean, every week, you know, Facebook crashes. I mean, you know,
yeah.
That's just traffic.
Hey, forget Facebook, Microsoft. I got a PC here. Thomas keeps getting on me because I don't have to go to the Mac. The PC just thinks, I couldn't do anything last night. I mean, it was up to 1:30. That's early for me. I want to go to bed. Because the day gone, Microsoft wouldn't load. I mean, so, what are we talking about this?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty hard to launch an entire nationwide healthcare system and expect it to function perfectly day one.
Can you hear me good now, Robbie?
I can hear you, Michael. I sure can.
Okay. Explain to us a little bit about Eagleonomics.
Well, Eagleonomics, just the main nuts and bolts of it is returning the liberties and the freedom back to the people of the United States by taking the best of the left wing and the best of the right wing. It's not necessarily compromising in the middle because that's what's gotten us into the mess that we're in right now. You know, there's some robust parts of the left wing and some robust parts of the right wing that are actually pretty good, but when they start bringing them together to try to compromise somewhere in the middle, each plan loses a lot. Our plan, Eagleonomics, takes the best of the left, the best of the right, and let's go ahead and let's get this country restored and move back in the right direction. And with what you've seen in Washington, I believe it's going to take someone like myself that's going to stand up and say, hey, both sides have some good things, but we need to have a president that's going to be able to stand up and say, hey, look, we're going to take the best from you and the best from this side, too, and we're going to work together to make this country a better country. And okay. That's what we're doing. And I think that has been lost up in Washington with all of our legislators. All they're doing is going up and trying to fight with each other and point the finger, cast the blame when something goes wrong, even if it's a minute little detail.
Okay, well, you know, you say you take the best from the left and the best from the right. Well, isn't one of those like taking the North Pole and the South Pole and trying to have them come together? They always repel one another. How could you get the left and the right, the best of the left and the best of the right? Are you talking about the far left or the far right? Or are you talking about just the left and just the right?
Well, what you've got to ultimately understand, if you're in politics, is that both sides are trying to promote a better America. They're just doing it from different philosophies. But I do believe that there's parts on each side that are pretty good for this country, and we need to work with those. You know, I believe that every person in this country should be able to have health care. I would like to see unemployment go away. I believe that my plan, which calls for bringing back the manufacturing jobs and also becoming energy independent, actually goes across through both parties, because both parties would like to see that. Now, they may want to do it in different ways on each side, but the fact of the matter is everybody wants to see Americans put back to work. My plan, Eaglenomics, does that. We'll bring back these manufacturing jobs. We'll become energy independent, and we will look at an economy in the United States that can once again thrive like we have before.
Well, let me just – I want you to listen to this short bit here. It's just about 29 seconds. Just listen to this.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome, good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Now, that was Paul Weinrich, the father of the conservative movement. So when you say you want to take everybody from the left, I mean it's the good things from the left and the good things from the right, I can understand that. But we have people now that are on the right who don't want good government. Because when you have good government, everybody votes. They don't want everybody
right.
to vote. So how do you get rid of these people? And I don't want to just pick on the Tea Party, but yes, I'm going to pick on the Tea Party because they're the ones that are causing this. They started out, I think they were hijacked along the way. Because I don't believe they actually, well, yeah, maybe I do believe. But it's just a little bit hard for me to see how you're going to get these people when you have a group of people that have hijacked the conservative movement. I mean, the old quarterback Jack Kemp was a conservative, but he wasn't like this.
Well, Michael, let me just say this, okay? We've got a plan to win this election, and there was over 90 million Americans that were able to vote in 2012 that chose not to because they didn't feel like they had a candidate that represented them. I truly believe that my candidacy is going to reach out not only to those 90 million, but also to reach out to people in the Democratic Party, and I believe there's a lot in the Republican Party that are going to like what we have to say as well. I do know that the veterans are really taking a strong interest in what we are doing, which is over 30 million Americans. And then on top of that, of course, because in 2012, I did get a lot of practice. You know how as football coaches, we love to have practice. And so in 2012, I ran to get my name out there, and I got in a lot of the third-party debates just to get the practice. So I believe that we'll probably get a lot of the third-party and independent votes, too, as well. What we need is a candidate that's going to really reach out and try to build some bridges between all sorts of people. And if you look at my career, I have always been a bridge builder, whether it be building bridges with people from different ethnic groups, different races, different religions, whatever the case may be. I've always tried to be that guy that tried to find common ground with all sorts of people so that we could get all sorts of people to work together. Because, you know, here in the United States, this is a melting pot. You see, whether you're black or white, young or old, male or female, gay or straight, Democrat or Republican, we're all unique in this country. We can celebrate our differences because we have that one common bond. We are all Americans, and it's time for us to stop working against each other and start working together. You know, all those years that I coached football, Michael, late in the game or at halftime, if we'd go in and we'd be down, I'd tell the team, one thing for sure, when we go out this second half, if we don't work together, we don't have a chance. Well, it's the same way with this country. We don't have a chance if we don't start working together. And that's what you saw in Washington this past month with the government shutdown, is because people on the Democrats and the Republicans, they refused to work together and find common ground. I'm saying it's time to have a candidate that is put forth to be the president of the United States that is not just going to talk that talk but actually walk that walk, to find common ground with all sorts of folks so that we can actually get some things accomplished in this country.
Okay, but don't you believe that Thomas, just 1 minute. Don't you believe that it's going to be difficult to change the hearts and minds of some of these people?
Well, and I agree with that, but let me just say this. I believe there's enough people across this country right now that have been watching what's going on in Washington for decades, and it's really just coming to a boiling point this past month with the government shutdown. But by seeing that, these people across the country, I believe they're just fed up. They're sick and tired of being sick and tired, and they want to go in another direction. They want somebody that's actually going to bring people together, that's actually going to be able to find a compromise so that we can come to some solutions, structured solutions for this country, so that we can actually have a better America for our children and our grandchildren.
Hey, Mr. Will, so I have a question for you. I know that in the past, I mean, you are very broad-based. You know, you've been with third parties. You've, I think at one time you were even part of the Ron Paul campaign or something. But I know that you have a wide range, and you're willing to work with all sides and all. And I really like what you just said, because I think it has reached a point of the system's broken down now, and people have reached a boiling point where they want progress again, you know, and they want people that are adult enough to say, hey, we've got differences, but let's get back to work and quit this, you know, the shenanigans of standing in the corner with our arms crossed, you know.
Right.
So given all that, though, I'm just going to ask a kind of blunt question to be mean for a second, but the Tea Party was largely responsible for the extreme divisiveness that came about this last time. And one of the focal points, you know, he's even in the news again this week, is Rand Paul, the Ron Paul's son, because now this is a totally separate issue, but with all the plagiarism and stuff, which I'm glad, by the way, that you think for yourself. That's amazing. Thank you. But I'm just curious, do you find that, or because maybe you've worked with them in the past, maybe you could be the bridge to fix things, but do you think you'll be able to work with guys like this, or do you find that they are a large part of the problem that needs to be bypassed so we can get this country back to work? Because it literally was shut down by a very, very narrow group of, I call them extremists or ideologues or whatever you want to call them, but they had one point of view and they refused anyone else's point of view.
Yeah, and I understand where you're coming from. Here's what I will tell you. I think that some of those that have taken those extreme views, they, because of that and because of what happened this past month, of course, in Washington, D.C., shutting down the government, I think a lot of their constituents are starting to put some pressure on them, say, hey, look, you know, you made your point, but it's time to start working together with these other guys and these other ladies up in D.C. So I think that only time will tell with a few of our elected officials. What I will say is this, someone like myself standing up for literally everyone in this country, because, see, we're not going to have true freedom until we have economic freedom. It was Abraham Lincoln that pushed for the passage of the 13th Amendment that abolished slavery. And I venture to say that in 2016, it's time to elect a candidate that's going to go to Washington and push for legislation that's going to break the chains of economic enslavement that is literally on 100% of our population. And that's what I'm looking to do. As long as people disagree with me, but they're agreeable in their disagreement, I believe that we still can work together. And I'm hoping that that's what's going to happen. What I will tell you is this. By being elected in 2016, I think that Washington will be handed a mandate from the people by an election of someone like myself, and hopefully it will be me. So with that being said, if we've got a mandate like that, then there's a lot of people that are elected up there going, hey, well, wait a minute, all these people across the country, they're siding with Robbie Wells. And if that's the case, I better start looking at how he's trying to, you know, bridge the gap and get people working together, because if I don't, then the next election cycle, that person might be out of a job.
Right. Well, you know, I was, when you were talking about getting, you know, all the people together, how do you explain what the Tea Party does, especially down here in Virginia? I mean, the women are, my explanation is that they don't want women to vote. Women are going to be beaten down. They're beating them down. They're taking away every single right that they have to be a woman, and they're telling them how they need to act. I mean, you're talking about the Taliban. The Taliban, you know, makes women wear all the what's it called, the garb,
burqa.
The burqa, hide, only see their eyes. They make them do this. You can't do this. You can't do this. This is the start of it. They're talking about having this religious jihad here. They're bringing it themselves with women. And if you think that telling women they cutting out all abortion, first of all, you have to have every single child that you have without any sort of participation with a doctor interfering and saying that it could be your life or your death. You have to have that child. I mean, this is outrageous. It is just outrageous. How do these people expect women, and why do women? Maybe I need to ask this to a woman instead of you. I mean, well, why do women go along with this? I mean, I just don't understand.
Well, Michael, again, all I can say, and again, I don't want to get into what this one's doing and what that one's doing. I'm getting into, at this point, let's stay focused, because you've got me as a candidate on here. Let's focus on what I'm trying to do as far as bringing these folks together. There's going to come a point in time where I'm going to be in some debates with some people with some different points of view. Here's what I'm going to tell each and every one of them. When you come to that debate, just make sure that you come with a pencil and a paper, because I'm going to be schooling each and every one of them in Constitution 101, the Bill of Rights 101, and the Declaration of Independence 101. But we've got to stand up for the people in this country. That's exactly what I'm doing. I've taken a stand. I'm asking everybody else across this country to rise up with me, people from all different backgrounds. You know, it was Thomas Jefferson that wrote in the Declaration of Independence that all men are created equal. Well, I truly believe that. All men are created equal. It was Dr. Martin Luther King that said he dreamed of a day where a man would not be judged by the color of his skin, but by the content of his character. And I believe we're at a point right now where it's time to put up or it's time to shut up when it comes to that. Okay, here's the deal. I'm putting up. I'm putting myself out there on the line for the people in this country. And I believe there are enough people across this country that are going to be able to hear what we've got to say and say, you know what? He's making a lot of sense. He's making a lot of common sense, because my platform, the game plan, is a step-by-step common sense approach to restoring this republic. But make no mistake, come November of 2016, I intend on being right there with the people of the United States and authoring in a new document for this country called the Declaration of Restoration.
Explain that real quick. So the restoration, are you going to, is that your just your general plan for the entire presidency, or do you mean a specific document to pass into law?
No, it's just general. But we've got to restore this republic. We've got to bring these manufacturing jobs back. We've lost 4.5 million of them in the past 15 years, strictly because of the North American Free Trade Agreement that Mr. Clinton signed into law. We've got, and I know he was a Democrat, but hey, you know what? If I agree with a Democrat, I'm going to tell him that. If I disagree, I'm going to tell him that too. Same thing with the Republican. And I think it's about time that there's somebody that steps forward and says, hey, look, right is right, wrong is wrong, and right never hurts anybody. Well, the fact of the matter is this country has been hurting, and the workers in this country have been hurting for the past 15 years because we've lost all these manufacturing jobs. My plan calls for bringing these jobs back, bringing these companies back to the United States of America. My plan calls for another 3 million jobs to be created through becoming energy independent. We've got to take care of our own backyard before we start worrying about anybody else's backyard, or we're not going to have a backyard.
Okay, well, here's a question for you with that, because it, from, you know, different news sources I was listening to recently, you know, Obama has been trying to push through immigration reform, but there are some forces that they said they may be trying to push that off past 2016 so that if there is a change in parties in the White House, there'll be a change in how that, you know, law and reform is done. So,
right,
given your stance, and if you, you know, bring jobs back and end NAFTA or do whatever, what are your plans to do with, because regardless of what you've done, they have created a problem over the last 30 years, ever since, you know, Reagan opened the borders to and got all this quote-unquote free labor, you know, that we got over here. Now we've got, you know, 20, 30 million of them. We've got to do something with them. And it, are you going to, you know, hope that Romney goes door-to-door and self-deports them? Or, you know, or you're gonna do you have a plan for what to do with the people already here that were brought in as cheap labor?
Well, I do have a plan. And here's the thing. There's going to be a lot of people that are going to step forward, and they're going to whine, and they're going to complain about the problems, and they're going to try to run for president, they're going to try to run for all sorts of office, and they're going to whine about the problems, but they're not going to give you any solutions. I'm going to give you a structured solution. All my solutions are structured solutions to how we can take care of this problem. You see, I truly believe that this country was built on immigrants, and that's what we are all about. We should embrace immigrants that want to come here, that are looking for liberty, they're looking for freedom and a better way of life. The reason that we've got such a huge problem and a huge number of illegal immigrants, one of the main reasons is because the way the system is set right now and the laws that are in place, it's practically impossible for a lot of these immigrants that are coming from Central and South America to afford to go through the process because it is financially taxing. My plan would call for, number one, quadrupling our border patrol, whether we use the Department of Homeland Security to do it or we just beef up our border patrol agents. But to quadruple our border patrol is shut down the border, and then at that point, if someone wants to come into this country, let's let them serve for freedom if they do not want to go through the financial process because they can't afford to do it. In other words, we'll let them go into the military for a process of about 4 years. During that process, we're going to educate them on the history of this country, on the founding fathers, and what our people have had to go through to get to the point where we are right now. Maybe these people need to be educated on the English language. At the entire time that they're going through this program, they will be earning a wage, a taxable wage, I might add. And let me also add, this is actually already a law. I just want to expand upon it. There's about 2,000 to 2,500 people that actually go through this process every year. I just want to expand upon it with what we've got. Now, we've got a major problem with millions of people that are already here. And there is huge concern with a lot of our citizens that these illegal aliens are actually bleeding this country dry as far as some of our resources. I can understand that, and I think that we've got to take a strong look at the illegals that are here and give them an opportunity to either serve for freedom or maybe we need to look at taking away some of the free benefits that they're getting, even though they are illegal aliens here. Either way, we've got to entice them to actually become law-abiding American citizens. You know, I'd like to see it where everyone in this country that comes in has a chance to gain their freedom and gain their citizenship. I'm actually in contact with people all the time that are here on work visas, people that have actually come here and actually earned their citizenship, the whole nine yards. But I would. I'd love to see these people have the opportunity to actually become an American citizen just like myself.
Well, you know, but here's a problem I have with not what you're saying, but what is being said is that people who are illegal cannot get things free from the government. They cannot get health care. They can't get food stamps. They can't get none of that. If they're sick, they have to go to the emergency room. And because the emergency room says that's the only thing that they are treated for in this country. They can't go get food stamps. They can't get anything free. So that's not true. So they're not taking away. They're bleeding this country. These people have jobs that a lot of these people don't want, like painting houses, like, and they're doing it cheaper. Okay, I grant it. But it's the people who own the companies that are hiring them. So they know they're illegal, and they don't have to pay them. Those are the people we need to get, not these poor people that want to make some money to make a living. It ain't their fault that someone, hey, is it, whose fault is it if you go into the lion's den and sit down in the lion's bowl that he eats out of? It's your fault.
Well, and let me say this, Michael. Michael, let me say this right now. The problem that we've got right now, if you really want to know whose fault it is, it's all of our fault for allowing this problem to exist and to actually expand like it has over the past few years. So we are a very diligent and resilient people, the people in the United States, and we are a very smart people. And it is time for us to step forward and come up with a solution for it. Now, here's the thing. I don't believe that any solution out there is going to be 100% foolproof. But I will take this. I will tell you this. I've got a solution. And anybody else that has a solution, I would welcome to be able to talk with them about their solutions as well. But I will tell you this. We can't keep doing what we're doing and expect to get a different result. We've got to take action, and that's exactly what my plan calls for.
Well, I want you to listen this to the head of the Republican Party, or the Progressive Party. This is what he had to say on immigration.
The Grassley Amendment to the Gang of Eight bill simply said we would gain control of the border for 6 months before any other aspect of the bill, which is exactly what we were told. We've been played on this immigration business. We've been played from the beginning.
So we've been played on immigration. Well, the people who've been playing us is his ilk. They've been playing us. Well, you only can get played if you don't know any better. You know, I love the line from the American President where Michael Fox tells Michael Douglas in the Oval Office, he says, "Mr. President, you got to come out and say something about what's going on here. I mean, you know, people are out in the desert. They wander in the desert, and they see a mirage, and they think it's water, and they drink. They'll drink the sand because they think it's water." And Michael Douglas says, "Yes, the only reason why they drink the sand is because they don't know any better." Well, the problem is people sometimes don't want to know any better. And you have a great thing that you want to get out to those. You said it was 90 million people didn't vote. How many of those 90 million people just don't give a damn and didn't get out and vote? I was reading it. I think, Thomas, you have a clip of it there about it was one of the people here in Charlotte. He says that he has a teacher. I mean, he has a a doctor. He has a doctor. Yes. Now, this is unbelievable. This guy, this is from The Observer. Mecklenburg voter turnout, a sorry sign of the times. And he says here that I believe he said that he has a sister, he has a daughter. His 38-year-old bright, very 38-year-old bright golfing buddy, and a dentist who did not vote. Now these people aren't stupid.
No, they're just apathetic. That's different.
No, but you see, I just can't believe apathetic. Apathetic is getting them off too easy. They are people who don't care about nothing but themselves. If it don't affect me, I don't care. And that's not apathetic. Apathetic means you're fed up with the whole thing. That's not the case. If it was putting a dollar in their pocket, they would have went out and voted. $1. If they were putting a quarter in their pocket,
well,
they would have went out and voted.
Speaking of that, look, this is economic policy with what we've got going on now with immigration. One thing that you said, Mr. Wells, about reforming the system and getting it back on track. Now, I've seen many debates and read extensively on it in economics, and one of the things that's been going on, you know, talk about that willful ignorance. A lot of companies make substantial profit off of having illegal workers because they don't have to pay the correct wages. They don't have to worry about health care. They don't have to worry about any of that type of stuff. And, you know, there's been the little game, like, for instance, there's the, well, there's this charades game over here about, you know, all the, you know, chicken and agricultural places that they keep shuffling workers
right
around, and they get busted, you know, every 6 months when somebody wanders in. But they have said, off the record, that they've said, and, you know, everything that I've read, that if there were true immigration reform and if it was all, you know, jobs returned to Americans, they would, quote, unquote, be put out of business because all their money would go away because they would have to pay, you know, real jobs, wages, and real benefits, which just tells you that the whole system is geared toward profits rather than people. So what do you do? Since you're talking about fairness and you're talking about, you know, we're an immigrant nation and reforming things, but what do you do with companies that willfully like the broken system we have now because they can just exploit it for profit?
Well, you've got to ask yourself about the system and why the system is broken, where these companies have to do that, and we've got to look at actually fixing that system. I believe that if we put a plan in place which will slow down the number of imports and at the same time drive down the cost of manufacturing here in this country, it's going to bring all these manufacturing jobs back, and at the same time it's going to help these companies that are here now so they don't have to do everything under the table and illegally, per se.
Okay.
Well, I have another question, but I have another call that's waiting, but I have to ask you this, Coach. What the hell is going on with the Dolphins?
Well, you know, here we are. We're talking politics, and now all of a sudden you want to talk a little football. I'll tell you what.
Football, Coach, that's why I'm talking to you. What the hell? You're telling me that this is the mentality of teams? I don't believe it. I don't believe it.
Well, here's the thing. First of all, let me say this. I am not in that locker room, so I couldn't tell you exactly what was going on in that locker room. I will tell you that anytime a rookie comes into camp, it's basically just the understood rule that the veterans will take the rookies under their wing and do what they've got to do to get those rookies ready to play, whether it's to toughen them up or to teach them. You know, different people respond to different things, and that's one thing I found in coaching.
I can't let you get away with that. What does toughen them up mean?
Well, you know, who knows? Who knows what's going on down there as far as toughen them up and what that means? You know, a lot of times an athlete is put through a lot of rigorous activity because they want to break that athlete down so that then they can build them up, build them back up the way that they want them to be built up in their system. You just don't know. I'm not in the locker room. I can tell you.
Listen. To me, that is completely brain dead. This ain't the damn Army. This ain't the Marines. This isn't SEAL Team 6. I mean, you know, this is nuts. These people are getting paid a lot of money. And this one guy, Cam Seelan, right? Cam Seelan. I don't have time to play it right now, but I might play it later. Cam Seelan just came out and said that, and these are his exact words. He knows Incognito, and he said his coach fired him, got rid of Cognito because of the nonsense he was doing. He said Incognito was a major scumbag. I have the recording that I will play later. He not only got the reputation, but he got that fired, got rid of from two different colleges.
And Michael, let me say this. Let me say this about Mr. Incognito or anyone. A lot of times when something negative comes out like this, everybody wants to jump on the bandwagon. What I would say is let's go ahead and see the investigation through and see what happens and then go from there. But really, in the big scheme of things, okay, we've got all sorts of problems going on around this world right now. We've got all these people that are out of jobs. And I believe that probably should take a little bit more precedence over the Miami Dolphins and what's going on in their camp. And you know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think that's your duck as a coach saying that. I think that's your duck as a coach, a former coach. You don't want to go that direction. Please give me a break.
Amen.
I mean, he wasn't busting people's heads. He should have went into SEAL Team 6. Then he could bust people's heads on purpose. I mean, this guy is Seelan had his eye socket broken by one of the players when he was with the St. Louis Cardinals. No, when he was with the New Orleans Saints, he got his eye socket broken because this guy, and I can't remember which player it was, a sock full of pennies and whacked him in the face with it when he was a rookie and broke his eye socket. And he couldn't play for a year. Now, there's Hazen, and then there's Hazen. Come on.
Let me say this now. If that's what's going on, then, of course, that's criminal activity, and that should be dealt with accordingly. All I'm saying is this. There's this notion here in America now to rush to justice on a lot of things, and really what we really need to do when there's a situation that occurs as a nation, as the people, is we need to take a pause and, to a certain degree, let it play out and let the actual process of going in and doing the investigation take place before we pass any judgment. Now, I'm not saying that he's right, and I'm not saying that he's wrong. I'm just saying that, you know, the investigation needs to be done. That's one thing that I've always tried to do is to be fair with everyone.
Hey, I am not rushing to judgment. I'm just saying that if a guy's going to use a bag of pennies and smack you in the eye with it, there's something wrong with this.
Well, there is
okay.
Something wrong with that. Exactly. But I'm talking about this situation right here with the Dolphins. You know, what we need to do is we need to...
There's more to it than that. There's something more going to come out. We'll hear. I need to wrap this up because we got somebody on the phone who's calling us from Canada. And I need to get to that phone call.
Right.
And thank you. This is Robbie Wells, who is the candidate for President of the United States. Give us your numbers that we can contact you.
Well, Michael, first of all, let me thank everyone for being on this call. today. You can check out our website at www.robbiewells2016.com. When you get on there, you can also click on Facebook. You can also find us on Twitter at Elect Robbie Wells. And if you will go on our actual website, you will see Eaglenomics. You can click on Eaglenomics and see our economic plan. You can also click on, there's a T-shirt there that'll you can click on and go into our store. And, of course, those the proceeds from that actually go and help to fund this campaign as well. There's over 600 items in our campaign store now. So please go on and check all that out. Let me just say, for the people in the Philippines right now that, that just went through this horrific, horrific typhoon with winds of over 200 miles an hour and wind gusts of over 235 miles an hour, that my thoughts and my prayers are with those people and with the Filipino-American community, which I actually spent last weekend with here in North Carolina at the Filipino-American Gala for North Carolina and South Carolina. So my thoughts and prayers go out to those people that have been devastated by this storm.
Yes, and I love the Philippines. As a matter of fact, I don't know if I told you, I almost married a young lady from the Philippines, from Mindanao.
Well, Michael, she must have gotten smart pretty quick, and that's why y'all didn't.
She did. She says, beat it, buddy. But what can I say? But anyway,
that's why there's a anytime you say Michael Lawson in the Philippines now, women run.
But anyway, thank you, Robbie, and I'm gonna hear from you next week now.
Hey, well, God bless each and every one of you, and God bless these United States. Goodbye, guys.
Thank you. That was Robbie Wells, candidate for president of these United States in 2016.
He says we must rise up.
We must rise up.
Sure says.
Absolutely. And I got to play this for our Canadian affiliates.
With today's announcement, I know I embarrassed everyone in this city, and I will be forever sorry. There's only one person to blame for this, and that is myself. I know that admitting my mistake was the right thing to do, and I feel like 1,000 pounds have been lifted off my shoulders. I can't explain how difficult this was to do. I hope that nobody has to go through what I have gone through. I know what I did was wrong, and admitting it was the most difficult thing I have ever had to do. Folks, I have nothing left to hide.
And with that note, we have Laurie Miller from Toronto on the phone.
Hello. How are you?
What do you think about your mayor in his one of his first major entries into the world of We Got You?
Well, it's embarrassing. I mean, everyone that I know who is from the States, I'm constantly getting texts and emails asking me about the situation. You know, he's a disgrace, without a doubt. But he's, you know, coming from a long line of disgraced public figures nowadays. You know, Anthony Weiner comes to mind. John Edwards. I mean, it just goes on and on and on.
At least At least Anthony Weiner didn't smoke crack in a crack house somewhere.
No, we
didn't. Yeah, but he's still a pervert. I think the main thing is that, you know, nowadays, it won't be long before the word shame gets erased from the dictionary for lack of use.
And sorry,
you know?
I'm so sorry. Well, listen, yeah. Listen, what else he said. Now, this is what I want to talk to you about. Listen to this.
I love my job. I love this city. I love saving taxpayers' money. And I love being your mayor. There is important work that we must advance and important decisions that must be made. For the sake of the taxpayers of this great city, for the sake of the taxpayers.
And then he went on and said,
I was elected to do a job, and that's exactly what I'm going to continue doing. In 2010, I made a commitment to Toronto voters. I have delivered on that commitment, and I will continue to deliver on that commitment of saving taxpayers' money.
So, are you telling me this whole thing is about, hey, no matter what I did, I saved the taxpayers' money?
Exactly.
Well, what else did you do? I mean, what else did you do? Are the schools fixed? Do people have houses? Are there jobs? I mean, is that the only thing why he was elected?
Well, he was elected. Okay, I have to go back a ways. Toronto was amalgamated to the larger community a few years back. So it's the equivalent of New York City of having Long Island and, New Rochelle and Hoboken, New Jersey, all of a sudden being part of New York City. And it's the suburban areas surrounding Toronto that overwhelmingly voted for him, not the people that live in Toronto. So, and the people who live in the suburbs are the ones who were most concerned about the rise of property taxes and things like that, just like, you know, property taxes in Westchester, for instance, in New York are sky high.
So they're
the ones who voted him in.
Right, okay. Mm-hmm. The people that found an area, that their whole thing was, well, our taxes are going up, so we need somebody that's going to save us.
Yeah, and he did, you know, he did put a stop to the rise in certain property taxes and other things. But, you know, at this point, irregardless of what he's done, he is the face of embarrassment for the city. He's a source of jokes all over the world. And Toronto being an international city, it's just not really good to have him as the face of our fair city at this point. And so the latest thing I read today that his brother mentioned that he's considering, he might be considering rehab. And this is a joke, for a week or two to deal with his problems. And I'm like, a week or two?
Listen to this. This is something else he said.
I want to be crystal clear to every single person. These mistakes will never, ever, ever happen again. I kept this from my family, especially my brother Doug. my staff, my council colleagues, because I was embarrassed and ashamed. To the residents of Toronto, I know I have let you down, and I can't do anything else but apologize. I apologize, and I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry. That bothers me the most. Not the fact that we've got, you know, the politician being caught, you know, lying or cheating or doing whatever. Okay, we've destroyed, and not to be a defender of drugs. I think drugs completely destroy lives and society. But I'm an opponent of America's view, like having endlessly and horrifically long and cruel drug laws over here that we incarcerate people forever with. But if everybody that gets caught with drugs, and especially crack is a real drug. It isn't like, you know, he was, you know, drinking a little bit too much one day and, you know, ran into the stop. But the rough guy taking a hard drug now that can sit up here because he's in a position of power and wealth and prestige and just kind of go, I'm sorry. You know, if it's anybody else, common Joe, anywhere, you're actually destroyed and drugged to prison and your whole life is over.
That's
what I don't understand, like this privileged life that the rich have. And that's the part that bothers me. All these politicians that get caught red-handed doing things wrong, nothing happens to them.
Yeah, well,
and then everybody does a real thing, and it's embarrassing. It's criminal, and he should have gone like anybody else. You know, if this guy was any regular job, he would have been terminated.
Yeah, but you see, here's the problem, though. It's not against the law to smoke crack. It's against the law to get caught smoking crack.
Well, I mean,
see, he didn't get caught smoking crack.
No,
that's not getting caught. It's like, you committed a robbery? Yeah. So I can't arrest you. What a robbery. You know, there's a law. And then besides that, well, let me ask you that. Lori, have they filed charges, criminal charges against him that you're aware of?
No, there's no charges that can be filed because he wasn't caught in possession of the drug. It's over.
That's right.
It doesn't matter. I mean, you know, didn't Obama say that he tried cocaine when he was in high school or something?
And
we can't arrest him for that. It's over.
And Bush, well, Junior was...
The question depends. You know, he destroyed his brain so much he couldn't remember.
Right, he couldn't remember if he smoked. Right, well, I just want you... Now, these are the people. These are the reporters that he's talking to in this last clip. Hear the howls and screams when he winds up with his sermon or his crying speech. Just listen to this.
Dean, I sincerely apologize. God bless the people of Toronto. Thank you very much.
Now he says, God bless the people of Toronto, and they burst out of laughter. I mean, you know what? I mean, come on. These are the beat reporters that cover him. I mean, you know, but today, this ain't nothing. Today, I have to play this for you. This is the latest from the mayor today. And this is called 2013 Tirade Again.
Oh, yeah.
No. Who are these people that are taping this guy? I mean, who is he?
He's probably like the life of the party.
Said we couldn't hardly hear it. It was kind of, but I have the text in my own hands. He said, Ford says, he dies or I die. Brother, you've never seen me blanking. Go blanking. You think so, brother? But who he's fooling with, I'll rip his blanking throat out. I'll poke his eyes out. I will blank him when he's dead. I'll make sure that mother blanker's dead. I need blanking bad. Just give me 10 minutes to make sure he's dead. I'll be all over. It'll be all over in 5 minutes. I'm a bad, bad mother. I'm a sick mother, dude.
Well, at least we can all agree with the
last. Yeah. What the? Yeah. I mean.
And look. They complain all day and talk about drug life and how happy they are. This guy is like proudly proclaiming he's a sick crack lord.
And these are the people who didn't want to pay taxes, but they'd rather have this.
But he, you know, he's in a drunken stupor. You got to forgive him for that tirade.
We saw him. I mean, his face is always red. His face is always red.
Always red.
And
I mean, that's a lot of his problem too. Is, you know, not only his behavior, but he is definitely an easy target because of his appearance.
Oh God, give me a break. Well. While we have you on here, diverting from the mayor, can you tell us a little bit about how healthcare works in Toronto?
How healthcare works? That's a big question.
I mean, you're sick with a cold.
Okay. So what we have?
And the cold is getting bad, so you're going to go to the doctor, or you want to go. You need a doctor. What do you do?
Okay, well, all over Toronto, there are local what they call walk-in clinics, and you can go into any of them if you have your health card and see a doctor. Most people, you know, have a doctor that they use in the clinic that's near them. But even if if that's not your walk-in clinic of your neighborhood, like if you're somewhere else, it doesn't matter. You can walk in if you have the card and you can see a doctor. If you're very, very sick, obviously you can go to the emergency room, so... You know, in that way, it's very similar to the States. The only thing is you're not paying for it.
Well, what about your own doctor? Are there private doctors that you can go to?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, how does that work with getting an appointment? You don't want to go to a walk-in clinic. You want to go to your private doctor.
Well, no, they have private doctors, and... you know, it's a matter of whether you find a doctor that's taking on new patients and, the same, as in the States. Like, usually people find doctors because a friend or a relative recommends somebody, right?
Right.
So it's the same here. No system is perfect, but what is inherently better for people who are not rich, is that, you know, you have preventative care is available to you for free. So, and that's a huge thing, you know, whereas I think a lot of people who are middle class or lower middle class or poor in the States, they don't see a doctor until they're feeling really, really bad. You know, they don't do an annual checkup because it costs too much money, and you can't get an annual checkup at a, you know, an emergency room in the States. You know,
right.
So in that way, it's definitely better. There are wait times for things that are deemed not life threatening.
Like,
but
Apple.
Well, I mean, like if you need knee surgery. You know, the chances are you're not going to go to the doctor and he's going to say, okay, I'll fit you in tomorrow for knee surgery.
Yeah,
you know, that's not going to happen.
I had severe sciatica, and I went to the emergency room and he said, we can only take an x-ray. I said, well, the x-ray's not going to show anything. I got sciatica. That's a nerve problem. He said, you got to go to your own doctor for that. So I had to wait
for
Monday.
Yeah.
My own doctor to come in. So he said, there's no difference.
No, it's the same. And, like, for me, my own personal experience, I had, this is about 4 years ago, I had a gallbladder attack.
Yeah,
And I went to the emergency room actually after the pain had dissipated. But I knew I had to go, like, to see what the hell was going on. And they ask you when you go into the emergency room, you know, they ask you, you know, from 1 to 10, what is the level of your pain?
Right.
And at that point, you know, I was like a 3. It was just a dull ache. So naturally, I'm not going to be seen before they take care of someone who's just been stabbed.
Yeah, well, that's, you're talking about emergency
right?
room. You're talking about the emergency
Excuse
room.
Excuse me?
Yeah,
in the emergency room.
Right, okay. That's anywhere.
So I was in the emergency room, and it was probably an hour later that I saw a doctor, and, you know, they immediately, you know, suspected it's probably gallbladder, and I had a sonogram. They gave me morphine, thank God, before they did the sonogram, because they have to, you know, press on your stomach, and that would not have been...
They found out you were pregnant. It wasn't
gallbladder.
I'm having twins.
Oh my God. So, but anyways, and then, you know, they did the blood count and all that stuff, and they you know, they knew that I had a situation, and they were prepping me for surgery. Mm-hmm. And so while I was awaiting that to happen, you know, meanwhile I was sleeping because I had the morphine, and then I checked my blood again, and the head of that department, the head surgeon, decided not to operate because when your gallbladder is inflamed, you have a higher chance of complications. It's like 10 times the amount of when it's not inflamed. So seeing how I was settling down, they opted not to operate at that point, which was the right thing to do. And I had surgery, when did I have surgery? I guess it was about 4 or 5 weeks later, because they wanted my gallbladder to really just rest. You know what I mean? And for all the inflammation to go down. Now, conversely, my daughter had an appendix situation, and of course they operated right away because that's a whole different thing.
Right, absolutely. Well, you know, you see, this is the thing. So there's no difference.
No, there's basically
no difference. The only thing is like, you know, when my daughter had her appendix out and she was in the hospital for about 4 or 5 days. You know, the only bill we had was for her phone, which was like, I think, $30.
Nicely. See, obviously, her failed.
So
I'm going to
your failed communist system.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
Here, if you get any kind of surgery, you're a couple million dollars in the hole, and then you lose your home, and you're on the street.
Well,
they drive by and push you down in the gutter.
I went to the emergency room for my sciatica. They didn't give me the – they gave me an x-ray and not a what do you call the what's the other thing?
Blood pressure.
No. They gave me the x-ray instead of the
sonogram.
Sonogram. Anyway, so the thing is that they gave me some couple of pills, some narcotic, and they said, go home, see your doctor. So MRI. We don't give MRIs as the doctor says. All right. So I got the bill. Like 6 months later, 6 months later, 6 weeks later, it was $2,700 for the emergency room. And the doctor that I spoke to, who came in and took my blood pressure again, asked me how the pain was from 1 to 10, and they said, yeah, you need an MRI. And he says, I'll give you a note. You see your doctor. I saw him less than 10 minutes. His was $2,800. So, I mean, that was over $6,000 just for nothing.
I have a friend up here. She was vacationing in Florida, and she had she also had a gallbladder situation. So she had an attack, and she went to the emergency room, and of course they didn't have coverage because they're from here,
right.
And it was $5,000, and she was only in the emergency room for 4 hours. And they tested her blood, and they probably did the same thing and gave her a sonogram. $5,000.
Well, I would like to say hello to you. Oh, Carla, who's this? Hello, Carla.
Hello.
Mr. G, are you there?
Hello.
G?
Are you talking
yes,
to me? Yeah.
Talking to you.
Oh, I mean, I was just listening in. I didn't try to get on the line.
Hello.
Yeah.
Say hello.
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 And we've all agreed.
This is your cousin George.
Hi,
George.
Hi. I turned in the middle of you talking about these operations, so I didn't know it was you. I just knew. You were talking about your operation or something. Yeah, I just turned in 5 minutes ago. I just got out of the theater.
Well, we were talking about the difference in healthcare in Canada, well, Toronto, compared to here. And the only thing we hear about that the difference is elective surgery. I mean, that's really different. And we don't have a lot of clinics around, although I guess there are a few clinics here. I know about 5 or 6 here in Charlotte, but matter of fact, I got one about a mile from here. But the thing is that they want to fool you, saying that Rick Perry was on the air today. That moron, he was on the air and he says we have the best health care in the entire country. And Todd was saying, well, what do you mean? He said, no, health access. That means we have hospitals, but that don't mean you have the best health care.
Yeah, exactly. No, the United States does have the best hospitals, the best access if you've got the money.
Yeah, because there's plenty of hospitals around. That's
yeah.
The only difference.
$35,000.
That's right. Every 30 minutes is $5,000 they just tack on to you. So the thing is now, since we – that's a free-ranging thing that we're going to be talking about with another guest calling in before. But I want to let everybody know that I am having a new website put together by Lori Miller and new cards. And I'm hoping to have those cards out to you in about 10 days or so, as soon as I get a hold of Vista. What?
I can attest that those new cards are spiffy-looking.
Are they spiffy-looking? Yeah, yeah. Yes, well, that was Ms. Lori Miller did that, and the website. Wait till you see the website.
Well, I have to tell you, if that is an example of her work after seeing your card
all
these years, I am impressed. I am looking forward to that thing, because that's some beautiful.
Well, I'm going to show you a cut of it here before you leave. But anyway, how are we with the website, Ms. Miller?
Well, you know, it's ready to be published, so we just have to.
And I spoke to one of the ATT techs, and he says it just might be Internet Explorer that's the problem. But I haven't gotten anything from the website yet. I mean, from the web people yet. I haven't gotten anything back from them yet.
Hey, Mike, I can just.
That's interesting.
Microsoft. If there's a problem,
it is Microsoft. If there's a problem. Yeah. Well, anyway, but so maybe she's a Apple person.
I'm a Mac head.
You're a Mac head. Send them another text for me, please, and say I got nothing back from them yet. Waiting to hear.
Okay. I will. Definitely.
And also, you have. Been quite busy for the last 2 or 3 years putting together a film. Is that correct?
Yeah, I have been too busy. But wait a minute. I wanted to finish talking about healthcare. There's another thing. Like when you're a senior citizen here, you can pay a $200 a year premium. Which allows you to get all your prescription medication for free for the year.
Oh, geez.
That's pretty helpful.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, prescription drugs are less costly here than they are in the States, even for drugs that are manufactured in the States, which is totally bizarre. I don't know how they do that, but it's the truth.
What happens is that we're suckers. That's what it is.
We even passed a law here to get drugs from Canada, too.
Right.
And they quickly quashed that.
Yeah, well.
No way.
Yes, I mean, hey, listen, you're kidding me. I have this medication that I take, and it's for, acid reflux, whatever it is. I have it. It's so expensive that my insurance company doesn't carry it. And it's like, for a 30-day supply was $173. All right? I went to the mail, and they gave me a 90-day supply for $45. Now, can you tell me what's wrong with this picture?
It's insane. I'll tell you an interesting story. I had a friend come visit me about 2 years ago. And when she left and she was driving back, to the States, so she was going through Buffalo, the border crossing there. And, respectable woman, she's like 60 years old, driving in, a newer automobile, nothing, to give a red flag that she's doing any kind of criminal behavior. And they stopped her at the border, and they're asking, oh, where were you? How long were you there? And then they said, do you have any prescription medications with you? Did you get any prescription medications? And she was unaware of this whole thing. And she goes, no, but she's not on any prescription medication. She's lucky. She's healthy, right? And so they ask her again, are you sure you don't have any prescription medications with you? And she goes, I don't, but if I did, what would be the problem? Well, that was the thing she shouldn't have said. They held her at the border for 6.5 hours. They went through all of her luggage. They searched her. They went through the entire car and just, tore it apart looking for prescription medication that would have been in her name. Okay? Now, they wasted the resources of the Border Patrol for 6.5 hours in an effort, an ongoing effort, to squash, seniors who are on fixed incomes from coming up here to buy drugs for their illnesses. And I'm like, this is, don't you have like some Al Qaeda or some drug runners, you know, to be concerned with instead of a 60-year-old woman who might have some arthritis medication in the car? Like, this is ridiculous.
She wasn't wearing a burqa.
No, she didn't have a burqa on at all. But it was terrible, and it took her another 2 years to get the strength to come visit me again because she was, you know, so you know, apprehensive about crossing the border and going through that thing again.
Unbelievable. So what you said, Thomas?
Oh, no, I was just saying, is there any more proof to me that corporations rule America? Because, you know, Al-Qaeda isn't any worry to them. They're worried about the profits.
Well, we want to get to the film that you've been working on for so long, but we have Mr. George Gaffney on here, our film critic, who has just got out of a movie. And what movie
was that?
What did
you see, George?
12 Years a Slave.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah, so
what did you think of it?
What is your thing?
It was an excellent picture. I haven't formulated anything. I'm in the car now driving home. But it was an excellent picture, but I mean, my goodness, I'm trying to go back and think of a picture that didn't have one laugh in it. There wasn't one joke. I mean, that's not a bad thing. I mean, that made it even more realistic. I felt that was they avoided the formula. The formula is to leave them happy and things like that. They did it without that.
But you know what I felt was that it was too one note in that way, because they never showed a real sense of bonding or a community between the slaves. There's no way you can survive for 12 years with the same expression on your face. There
yeah,
has
no,
to
Mikey,
be... What?
No, Mikey had mentioned that one of the things you said was that there was never a smile in it or anything like that. You know, there was never
like
a change in the
themselves.
Mood. Yeah,
and I thought, you know, that was unrealistic because, you know, one of the reasons why, you know, our people survived slavery was, you know, that innate ability to smile and have, you know, you have to have something to laugh about, otherwise you would absolutely want to kill yourself. We wouldn't have
absolutely.
Survived 5 years. Let alone 450.
Right. Well, the thing is, hey, even Kunta Kinte laughed. I mean, come
exactly.
on.
Exactly. Like, it was just, and I've been working on a story, actually, about that time in history. And, you know, there were so many different sides to the existence that was portrayed in that film. Like, it was just too bleak all the time, and I felt that the lead actor, he literally had one expression on his face for the whole time, and I wasn't impressed with his performance because of that. You know, like the bad guy in the film, one of the bad guys, Michael Fassbender, he played evil, but he played evil in about 6 or 7 different layers. And, you know, the guy was the lead, his Chiwetel, was it Ejiofor? He just had the same expression all the time, and it just, I don't know, it didn't work for me. It didn't work for me.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you. The fact that like Fassbinder had so many different moods and things like that, you know.
Yeah.
He was almost benevolent at one time and stuff like that. He was fair at one time, and then he was just a nightmare. And you know, I mean, he was the best actor as far as the best written role. Put it that way.
Yeah.
The best.
Yeah. His performance was definitely the best, you know, in that film. That's the way I thought about it, which, you know, that's unfortunate. You want to have the best performance come from the lead actor. you know.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, I don't know if you saw Captain Phillips,
Captain Phillips, yes.
Okay, so, you know, like Tom Hanks was stoic and strong throughout the whole movie to the last scene where he just broke. And that's what made, when he broke, that's what made it so emotional for the viewers to watch, because there was that extreme change in his demeanor.
He was holding it together for he was holding it together for everybody. And then
exactly.
Yeah, that was excellent.
And like with, you know, with 12 Years a Slave, like, you know, the lead character, he was the same all the way through. So you weren't along for an emotional ride with him. You know, you were just, it's just the same the whole way through. So,
I mean,
Were
there any women in the story that could have added a different perspective to his 12 years?
There was one woman, like the concubine woman for the slave master and stuff like that. And there, you know, but you know, they the whole bonding thing of anything support from the slaves was between each other, as Laurie mentioned earlier, wasn't really there. You know,
no, wasn't there. He didn't even eat with the other slaves. You know, I really feel that part of the emotional disconnect, I think, in that direction was because the director is British. He's black, but he's British. That's who he is. Stiff upper lip. I don't know, but because I've seen, you know, his other work. I saw Shame. Same thing. You know, there is just a kind of reserved quality in his approach. And I think it's there. I think that Michael Fassbender, you know, like he is, you know, this year's Daniel Day-Lewis in terms of, you know, his acting ability just exceeds even a director's intent, because he's just ridiculous and he's that good. But
is this something that, a film that should be seen? Or is it a waste of time? Or is it a popcorn Saturday night? Or
It should be seen and stuff like that. We all go to the movies. We all have certain things we'd like them to do. One thing Spike Lee said was, listen, if you want a movie the way you want it, then you have to make your movie. That's what Laurie does. She makes her movie. You can't have, nobody can make a movie that does what you want them to do. You know,
exactly.
I try to look at what did they do, how did they do what they did, how well did they do whatever they did. I don't want to get too involved in their selection of what to, which direction to go. Because he said that you cannot make a, no movie's going to, I want the movie, I want to see the girl more and stuff like that. You want to see the guy more. I wish there had been more explosions. You wish there had been less explosions. I mean, you can't go around, make your own movie if you want to, if you got all these things. I try to judge them on what they did do. But you're right about he was reserved and stuff like that. And just like in Django, I mean, in Django, when that dog, when they turned the dog loose on the guy and stuff like that, there was more emotion in that, basically, than even when the girl got whipped in this picture.
That's
you know,
right. That's
this director was, like you said, he's not an emotional. He didn't play scenes for really that kind of emotion. But that's like you said. I wasn't thinking about him being British, but that's part of his reserve, I guess. So you're right about that. It's totally. You know.
Conversely, like with Django, you know, again, I thought Jamie Foxx's performance was the same way, and it was one note. His expression was the same throughout the whole movie, and that was Tarantino's thing about not being able to do emotion. Like when he finally, you know, sees his wife. I would think most men would have a tear in their eye to see their wife after all that time, and he just stands there and goes, "Hello, troublemaker." And I'm like, really? After 2 hours of traveling the country to see your wife after it's been stolen from you, that's the best you could do?
My thing with Django is this. I said nothing in Django mattered, nothing counted, because only the one thing counted. This is my whole review, was nothing counted except this word, retribution. All of those people needed to die, and he killed them. I don't care about emotion. I don't care about motivation. I don't care about acting, costumes, anything. Those people needed to die. They didn't need to be redeemed. They didn't need to see the light. They didn't need to become better people. Yeah. They needed to die. He killed them. Case closed. That's it. As long as he did that, Django was wonderful, because he had to kill them. They had to die. They couldn't be redeemed or anything. And I said retribution. They needed to die, and he killed them. That's it. I'm happy. That's it.
Yeah.
Well,
my thing was this.
You should have seen this picture. This picture should have come out first, and then have Jamie Foxx come along and kill everybody in the second one.
Well, you know, you're talking about that. That reminds me of the scene in Goldfinger, where Goldfinger is looking at James Bond's strap and the laser's coming up between his legs, and James Bond says, "Goldfinger, do you expect me to talk?" He says, "No, I expect you to die."
I expect you to die.
That explains the whole thing in Django. So there were getting around it. Everybody was going to die. So it didn't matter how fit they were, because they were going to die anyway. If you were you were going to die.
Denzel Washington and Mark Wahlberg's picture, Two Guns. I said the plot was messed up, this was messed up, that was messed up. It didn't matter. The only thing that counted in the picture was their chemistry. It was Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. If you went with their chemistry, it didn't matter. The plot didn't make any sense. This didn't make any sense. But they did feature the villains. I said that the villains each got their chance. There were five villains, and each of them got a wonderful decision to let each villain do his own particular thing. But I said the main thing was the chemistry. It was a chemistry picture. It didn't have anything to do with the plot, or this didn't make sense, or it was just the chemistry. If you liked their interchanges, they had their little banter and stuff like that, and their cuteness, then that was it. You enjoyed the picture. It didn't have to make sense or anything like that. You know, it was a personality picture.
It's a popcorn movie.
That's what
it was. Don't go in there looking for some It's a Beautiful Mind type art or something.
No.
It's popcorn.
Well, you see now, but you're talking about someone, you two individuals, I include myself in that, we're going into a movie to be entertained, but to also look at the quality of the acting, the cinematography. Do the characters, do you love or hate the characters? If you can't love or hate the characters, the movie don't work. I don't care what it is.
That's right. Yeah.
So
you have to want them to live, or you have to want them to die. But you gotta have one or the other. It's gotta be there.
And if you don't,
that goes along with what you said about the lead actor, because what happens is you really, if in any scene, if he had died, you wouldn't have had emotional response to it.
No.
If any scene in that picture he had been killed, you would not have an emotional response, because he didn't play the part that way, and I guess it wasn't directed that way. You didn't have an emotional involvement in him. With Captain Phillips, like you mentioned earlier, I'm saying here's a guy, he's just out to take this boat from one place to another, and now he's got pirates chasing him. Now he's trying to save his crew. Now he's worried about you automatically are worried about the fact that he gets back with his family, because they did that little thing in the beginning when you met his family. You know, you were emotionally involved. If this guy had gotten killed, it would have just been another dead body. It wouldn't have, there wouldn't have been any emotional thing about him dying in the picture.
Nothing. And he's British too. So that was a double combination there. You've got a British director directing another Brit. And so, the emotion was definitely off the table.
Okay.
Before
I let you guys go, I want you to tell us something about your film, Lori.
Okay. I have a film called Keystroke that I just finished. And it's a romantic thriller.
Let me interrupt you. By the way,
what?
She directed it, produced it, wrote it, did the score, and cooked the food.
That's right. I did everything behind the camera. But it's a romantic thriller set against the student loan crisis, and this young musician who's struggling to pay a student loan, he falls behind, and he gets set upon by a psychotic collection agent, and all kinds of trouble ensues. So that's basically the story.
And where do you have it now?
Right now, it's like I said, it's finished, and we're working on doing a social media campaign to try to promote the film. Also, it's right now it's at a distributor, and we've been awaiting to hear their decision on whether they're going to release it. So, you know, it's as hard as it was to make the film, and it was a hell of a lot of challenges because all the actors worked for free, which meant we had to work around everyone's life and their jobs and their illnesses. And, you know, there was 23 people in the film, so somebody was always sick. But anyways, you know, all those challenges were amazing, but, you know, that's just the first half of any film. It's, you know, it's called show business. So I've got the show. Now it's the business part, which is,
right,
you know, a whole other mountain to climb. So that's where we're at now.
I want to tell you about, I have seen the film. It is very good. Hey, since I'm paying off my daughter's student loan right now, I'm telling you, give me a break. And I know my wife had to pay off her student loan for her master's and bachelor's. I know what it is. If I could do what this kid did, I would do it myself. can they see
what?
Any sort of, if the people want to go online, see some sort of a trailer or something, is there one out yet?
Yeah, you can go to keystrokethemovie.com, and you can see some clips from it and a synopsis, and there's some music on there. And there's also a page with some student loan horror stories that I collected from YouTube, which are pretty sobering to watch some of those, you know, just how it affects some people. I mean, you know, my film is not, you know, it's not a political statement. I mean, that is the nexus of this, the protagonist's problem. But there is some, you know, some real suffering going on out there with people who, you know, have $200,000 and $300,000 worth of debt, and they will never pay it off in their lifetime, and you know, affects their credit, so they can't ever buy a car or a house or a condo or anything because their debt to income ratio is so out of whack. I read that about one woman who's actually a surgeon. And her student loan won't be paid off until she's 71. And, you know, she can't buy an apartment. She can't buy a new car. And, you know, all she's doing is paying just huge amounts of money every month. And she's a surgeon. I've read about lawyers who, you know, sleep in offices because they can't afford an apartment because they're paying off their student loan. It's just amazing.
We have someone on the line here. We're going to ask about that. She's a lawyer also, very shortly. Well, you can hold on just a minute. But, you know, realistically, college debt now is more than credit card debt. I mean, that's
right.
How bad.
It's like last May, the student loan debt reached the $1 trillion mark. And when I was writing some copy for the film in September, it was 1.2, and so it grew by $200 billion in, you know, 5 months. And it's crazy, and it could be, you know, the next financial crisis. I mean, because you have these kids who are graduating with all this debt, a lot of it underwritten by the U.S. government, and there's no way they can pay it back. I mean, the economy, the job market is not there for them to pay this money back.
Right.
So it's pretty scary.
I just want everybody, in another, say, 2 weeks or so, we should have all this finished up. I'm going to have a new website, and we're going to have a I'll have a new card to pass out for everybody. But, Lori, tell us again the website they can go to read, to see about some film clips and everything of Keystroke.
Yeah, it's www.keystrokethemovie.com.
Okay, Keystroke.
And that's
the movie
where you can –
And to be politically correct, Lori Miller is my cousin.
That's true. His cousin, but I operate. I operate in the film world as Rain Power, so people don't know that I'm your cousin.
That's right.
Just kidding.
Well, hey. Wait a minute. Is that something that I missed there? What did I miss there?
Oh, nothing.
And that's also going with Mr. George Gaffney.
Okay,
yes.
Listen, Mikey, make sure Lori gets my email or something so you know, because I want to put her in contact with Georgie.
Right, absolutely. And
his projects.
Absolutely, I will make sure. And I don't know how much longer you can hold on, but I wanted to talk to you, George, about Mr. Incognito. Gee, it seems like I saw that film. Incognito?
Yeah.
Anyway,
Incognito.
We have another call.
All right, Mikey, I'm going to go.
I will talk to you later, Lori.
Okay. Bye, George.
Yes.
Okay, bye, Lori.
Right.
Now, I don't know if you could hold on a minute, George. I need to speak to this young lady. And hello, young lady. I see you've been holding for a little bit. I'm sorry.
That's quite all right.
Yes, and this is the lawyer we talked about, Monica Cloud. Monica Cloud, have you paid off your student loan debt yet?
Far from.
Far from. Well, you need to see this movie.
Thankfully, when it comes down to law school student loans, we have a 30-year period to do so. So we have a great mortgage to answer for.
Well, you need to see this movie. I mean, because it is about student loans and what this young man does and he tries to get away with it. I mean, it's really fabulous. And if I wish that I could have done it, and I wish I could do it with my daughter's student loan. But anyway, so tell us tell us what you do, Ms. Cloud.
I am a public affairs and political consultant. So I work with organizations as well as political campaigns with their strategy, messaging, as well as raising their profile just in the communities as well as nationally whenever necessary. I've worked with the North Carolina Democratic Party, with Kay Hagan as well as Kendrick Meeks' U.S. Senate campaigns. Also working, just finished with a campaign here in Virginia that we were very happy was victorious on Tuesday, and working also with organizations and nonprofit foundations.
And you have worked with North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, D.C. Are you telling me you're a regular Olivia Pope?
I would not say that I'm a regular Olivia Pope, but I do make sure that things are handled. So. Primarily helping organizations to actually small businesses too, to be able to function in within the communities as well as raising again national profiles and strategy and messaging in order for them to be able to raise their public relations and public affairs profile.
So you tell them if one of your the people that you're working for calls you up and says, "You got to help me. I found a dead dog in my bed." You wouldn't you would tell them to go call the ASPCA or what?
Well, Michael, I might actually have them to call you.
Well, I don't take calls after 2 a.m. now. So, I mean,
okay. Good to know.
Right. So tell us, what was your involvement in the past, couple of months leading up to the election?
Well, in the Virginia election, I was working with Delegate Michael Futrell, and he was actually one of two Democrats who was elected to the House of Delegates in Virginia. And out of the whole slate, he was actually one of two. We were also very successful with the governor's race, the lieutenant governor's race, and the attorney general's race is actually still being decided right now.
And how does that race look for the – that would be a great sweep if the Democrats would take all three of those seats.
It's looking very good right now. They are in the process of doing the recount. We were actually ahead, but it was a small margin. I saw today on the news at noon that there was a question about issues with the voting machines in one area as well as with absentee ballots in another area. So I think that really and truly Virginia is very much an example of the concerns that we should have in North Carolina when we look at the different laws that have been passed when it comes down to voter IDs and early voting and voter protection.
Well, you see, the thing is that the houses are split in Virginia. Is that correct? Republican and Democrats own the Senate, and I think it's the other way they own the House. Is that correct?
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
But there's still Republican majority in the House of Delegates.
With donuts. Yeah.
Okay. But what about the the Senate? Is that Democratic in Virginia?
I believe so.
Well, see, the problem we have
is it is Democratic.
Well, you see, the problem we have in North Carolina is who let the dogs out, because they control both houses.
Well, and that is something that I'm very confident that North Carolina will be able to regain both houses, maybe not in one cycle, but definitely in two.
So you really think that's a good – well, the problem here is that I believe a lot of people don't think about it until they actually get hurt. And here – I mean, just looking at Texas, when you had Jim Wright, who was the head Speaker of the House, and he couldn't vote because he didn't have a driver's license before. I mean, the one who's running for governor down there in Texas, he couldn't vote because there was something wrong. He changed the addresses or something, and that wasn't okay. So he had to sign an affidavit, and so did Wendy Davis. I mean, so there's something wrong with this picture.
Well, there is something wrong with the picture, Michael, because what people don't realize is that, it's disenfranchising not only minorities but also women and college students, and as well as, of course, an older population who may not drive or even individuals who are younger who may not drive, and so they may not be as inclined to get a government-issued ID. So it is something that is putting – another burden on people in order for them to exercise their right to vote. And it's something that we really have to take seriously when it comes down to supporting our Democratic Party and also looking at, making sure that we have great people who are working with them in order to ensure that we've got great people in our General Assembly.
Well, I was asking this to you weren't on the line. We have there's a gentleman named Robbie Wells. I don't even know about him. He's running for president of the United States. He's from Charlotte, North Carolina. And I had him the question about, I don't understand something. And I said, I asked him a question. I said, maybe I need to ask this of a woman. Why is it that so many Mexican women would vote against their own self-interest? I mean, I don't understand. I just don't understand this.
Well, Michael, you're going to have to probably get a Republican woman to come on to answer that question. I think that, you know, it really comes down to the fact that individuals look at their own personal ideologies, and we always forget that. The assumption on both sides is that people are going to vote blind because of loyalty, and I think that we've been seeing over the last, you know, 15 years that people are actually finding that there are things that they're able to relate to maybe in one space versus another. Colin Powell even spoke about that. And so we have to remember that for some people, they may agree with the bulk of the issues and have similar values with one party, but there may be different issues that, you know, resonate with them, don't fall in line with the values of the party. But again,
well,
you should probably get a Republican woman to come in and answer that one.
Well, I understand when you say that, but the thing is that when you start eroding a basic woman's right to choose and that gets passed, why can't that go on to something else about, well, you know, somebody else's right not to be able to choose? And, you know, since men are in charge, they're never going to have anything that's going to go against theirs, their rights. But aren't they afraid of that someday women might decide, well, you know what, there's more of us, let's get them out?
Well, funny enough, there was actually an interview on ABC World News Tonight that included all of the women in the Senate, the U.S. Senate, Republicans and Democrats. And one of the things that was said was that, you know, if there were more women, it would probably be less of an issue because the issue has been decided. So to continuously bring it up, it's really deflecting from other issues that are more important. You know, we need to handle of course, we had a shutdown that just occurred. In North Carolina specifically, we had, you know, WIC benefits that were not being able to be distributed to people who needed them. And so we keep – this issue is rehashed over and over again, not by women in the in these houses. It's rehashed primarily by men. The issue has been decided, and so we need to hold our elected officials' feet to the fire to get them to make decisions on things that are that have not been decided and that are affecting us, as we saw with this government shutdown that occurred.
Well, now, when you you decide who you're going to help in situations in the political realm. So what makes you say, you know what, I want to help this person? Or do you just help anybody that knocks on the door?
No, I actually do have I do actually listen to what the person is saying. I also look at their values and how they fall in line with mine. That is not something that is across the board people. But it does come down to, for me, a couple of different factors. And then really just, you know, having a conversation with the person and a couple of conversations actually to make a determination on, you know, whether or not it's a good fit.
So just because they're a Democrat, oh, yeah, I'm going to help you. That's not one of the criteria that you mainly look at then.
I'm sorry?
So if they come in and say, well, we want you to help all these Democrats, I mean, that wouldn't be one of your criteria. You would say, well, wait a minute, just because it's a Democrat, that doesn't mean I'm going to help them. I mean, because I say this all the time. I mean, when I go out to speak to people, I say, just because you voted Democrat your entire life or just because you voted Republican your entire life, maybe you were wrong, because all Democrats aren't the same and all Republicans aren't the same.
That is correct, but I think when it comes down to who I work with, it comes down to, again, if our values are in sync and if we, you know, we're able to actually work together. So there are a couple of factors for me personally when making that decision.
Okay. Being from New York, growing up, my family, Nelson Rockefeller was governor for 16 years. I mean, he wouldn't have got elected without the majority of the black vote. And he just wasn't, it just wasn't that he was responsible and responded to the black situation in New York State, but he also was there, he helped on the conservative side, but he did more to help everybody, which is his major motto. And so therefore, you know, when you say, well, Democrats won't vote for Republicans, well, that's not true. I mean, as long as a Republican is going to be
sane.
You
know, well, used to, all the parties had what we would call moderates or whatever today,
right.
But just average people who kind of leaned a little bit one way or the other, but they're really in the middle. They
right.
were just normal.
Right.
And they didn't do
normal. We don't know normal anymore.
Well, now it's all extremes. You know,
right.
Everybody has to go stand in their very far, far, far corner. But back then you did have people, and we would say one way or the other, they're a Democrat or Republican.
Right.
They were actually in the middle.
Right. How are your candidates that you backed, how do they turn out?
Mine have usually, as far as the result of the election?
Yes, this year.
Okay. Well, I've had wins and I've had losses. And I think that most people, including some of the well-known names, have had both. You know, unfortunately, sometimes the best candidate does not always win. So, you know, that's, we take the good with the bad with that, and we just live to fight another day.
Well, how do you think the politics has turned out so far? What direction do you think it's going, especially in D.C., Virginia, you know, area?
Well, I think actually nationally we're looking at a shift that is occurring. You know, it's weird. Democratic candidates are well-positioned heading into 2014. With everything that has gone on, you know, voters are not making a distinction, really, from what we've seen between the Republican Party and the Tea Party. So, you know, it really appears likely that we really hold as Democrats a strong, strong chance to make next year a referendum on their social extremism and government and with the government shutdown. So we've got strong Democratic candidates and incumbents who will provide a stark contrast to the Tea Party recklessness that's been going on. So, you know, I think that it really resonated in Virginia. You know, Chris Christie is someone who, you know, people really like and respect, I think, in New Jersey. In Virginia, it was very close, as you probably saw, between Ken Cuccinelli and Terry McAuliffe, and that was always known that it would be a close race.
But just a minute, what was the turnout in Virginia?
Well, the turnout is always a little odd because of the fact that it is basically an off year election. You know, we know we have a presidential year. We know we have the midterm that's considered off year. But Virginia, I mean, this is in between both of those. So
what's the turnout?
That is a good question. I have to actually look for statewide turnout.
I think to me, anything that's 25% or below is a disgrace. I mean, when you have, you know, you have a quarter of the people voting, telling the other 75% what they want, that is completely asinine. I mean, and why do people let this happen?
Well, we have to look at the party, at the state parties, in order to really get people out, get people motivated. We also have to make sure that our candidates are equipped and are properly funded to get the vote out. You know, when we don't have a Barack Obama at the top of the ticket, when we don't have a Bill Clinton at the top of the ticket, we have to find a way to beat the doors down and pull people out of their homes and let them know that these elections are very important, because even though it's not determining who's in the White House, it does determine what's happening in your house as far as, you know, benefits and services that are available. Education,
well,
everything.
The ancillary part is they do determine what's in the White House, because if you can redistrict, you determine everything.
And that is something that I think a lot of people do take for granted, that by determining who is in the General Assembly, those people determine how the districts are drawn, and then once those districts are drawn, it determines who comes to Washington, D.C., or who goes to Washington, D.C., to represent your state, and who's right, making those determinations that caused the government shutdown for
right.
16 days.
Right, absolutely right. And I was speaking to the district chair, the Democratic chair in North Carolina, and I said, you know, I want to know how it can be changed, where instead of voting for the President of the United States as the first person on the voter list, to put the President of the United States at the bottom of the voter list and put the judges at the top of the list. Because those
and,
are the
But, Michael, nothing stops people from just flipping. Nothing stops anyone from flipping to the back of the ballot either, though. It's just a matter of us making sure that we educate people on the importance of voting, not only at the top of the ballot, but down the ballot. We have to make them...
Right. Right, yeah, I understand that. But the problem is they are teaching less and less civics every single day in school. I know I had to take a civics class in high school as part of my graduation, a six-month course. I mean, they don't do that anymore. Oh, they talk about, yeah, there's a place called Washington and there's a White House, and, yeah, you know, you got a leader, there's a president, there's a vice president. Please, my five-year-old grandson knows 15 presidents. He can come and tell you all about them. He's 5 years old. Now, why? Because I've been teaching him.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the only way, because he ain't going to learn it when he gets to high school or college. I mean, they don't do it anymore.
They don't want an educated populace.
No, they don't want an educated populace. They don't.
Yeah, educated voters are difficult to control.
So how do – this is the reason why I said that things – need to be reversed on the ticket. But you're right. You need to vote down the ticket.
No,
so
I'm kind of agreeing with her, but even backing it back one step, I would be thrilled just to get the population into the voting booth. And then if they voted for anything, that'd be great.
Yeah.
We need to just get people.
Yeah, well, that's,
we need to
yeah.
educate people about the importance of voting,
yes.
period.
Yeah.
They need to show up. And then maybe they'll vote for Dogcatcher and you know,
right.
everything else.
Right. Well, that's true.
They need to get involved because
well,
we have this weird malaise in this country where everybody is saying, well, I don't like the way it's going. I don't like the way things are. Well, I'll just give up. And they sit around.
Yeah.
I mean,
they voted
you know
10 years ago.
You know why it's going bad?
Yeah,
because
right.
you don't vote.
Yeah.
You know, it's
right.
like, you
well,
know that's exactly
and our,
what you said.
Our problem really as Democrats is, in many for years has been that we have been reactive and not proactive. And I think that we saw with the 2008 election what can happen when we are proactive, when we actually feel vested in the process, when we actually feel as though we're educated on what's going on. You know, it's really important for us to basically get people to the point where they do realize and understand that when you decided to have children, you decided to become politically active. When you decided to, you know, take a job, you decided to become politically active. You decided to because of the fact that those are things that are determined by politics, by regulation, by laws that are passed. And so we have to basically take it back to the basics for people to understand. And I think that that is what the shutdown and the withholding of benefits in North Carolina during that shutdown did was show people why it's important. Now it is up to us to really take that information, take that momentum, take that sentiment, and do something with it. We have got to remind people of what it felt like in the month of October. We've got to remind them as they're digging out. You know, there are people in the federal government who are still returning phone calls during that 16-day period. So it is our job to remind people that they are affected, that there is not an excuse for sitting at home. And, you know, really, really help them to understand that you have a choice. Either you let it happen to you or you do something about it. That's
well,
it.
You know, in this next election, we might have more than 100,000 people who can't vote because they don't have a voter ID. I mean, well, you know, I'm not talking about North Carolina. Forget anybody else. I mean, you know, what are we going to do about it? Is it those people are not going to vote, so they're not going to add anything. to helping this thing along.
But it is our responsibility. It is our responsibility, though, to make sure that those people are not disenfranchised. That is our responsibility.
Yeah.
We're looking at the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, and we think about the sacrifices that the people made 50 years ago for us to be able to have a right to vote. So our choices are either to sit back and let it happen to us or do what they did 50 years ago and lace up our shoes and hit the streets, not just a matter of marching, but hitting the streets and getting our neighbors who may need help going to the DMV and getting their state identification. We have got to do what is necessary if we want to affect change. Either it happens to us or we make it happen.
Where can someone who's thinking about running for office and around here can get in touch with you, see if you could help them see the light? How can they get
in? Well, if anyone would like to contact you and then you're able to pass them on to me, that's probably the best way of handling it, since you do have quite a presence on the Internet and, of course, on the radio. So if anyone would like to contact you and then you pass it on to me, I'm more than happy to accept the information.
If anybody calls me and say they need Olivia Pope, I can just mention your name to watch the ABC.
ABC. Thank you so much for having me, Michael. I really do appreciate the time.
And I want to hear from you, a matter of fact, to see how it's going, what's down there, at the end of November, to find out how the health care is affecting any of the so-called people who are going to be running for office when Obama gets ACH working.
That's going to be interesting also. I think that is what the other side is hoping, that the Affordable Care Act will have a backlash. But again, I don't know how anyone could expect a website that is supposed to handle traffic of that magnitude is supposed to be properly maintained when it starts the same day the government shutdown.
You think?
It is essential staff. I understand. I'm very as I wrap up, I'm very confident that we are going to be able to do what is necessary to shift this country, and that we can see that the tides are turning. And I think that last Tuesday showed that.
And I just want to say, if anybody needs somebody that can help them with running for office, this is the young lady that knows everything. And she's also a lawyer. So, hey, can't go wrong.
Have a good evening.
Okay. I thank you, Monica Cloud.
Thank you.
D.C., Virginia, South Carolina, and North Carolina.
And Florida.
Okay.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Bye-bye. That was Monica Cloud. And this is what happened there. Oh, yeah, we got him back up. Yes, Mr. George Gaffney, are you with us?
I'm with you, but I'm going to have to change phones soon. I'm trying to get on. I got to get on the other line because I'm using. I was using the cell phone. I was in the car. Now I'm at home. Give me a what is 712?
No, it's 646.
Give me a number.
646.
Yeah, 646.
16.
646.
646-716.
716.
5242.
5242. Okay, I'll dial the number.
Okay, gotcha. Bye bye. Okay. Well, so we had some good guests here. Monica Lau, who is very smart. She should have been the chair of the Democratic Party in North Carolina. That's how smart she is. So, but we'll be hearing more from her.
But,
yes.
The more I talk with people across the country, it becomes more and more evident, which we've known for a long time, the intelligent one, the liberal one.
Oh, is that right?
It's always refreshing.
I think you're just your your communist stance for things.
Yes. Not to be, you know, totally slanted or anything, but
no,
I do find it refreshing that when we talk to people, you know, about positions and events and laws and things that are happening in politics, I love that we have a deep pool of knowledge on our side, well-informed people on our side, and that they make, you know, informed decisions.
Oh, well, now,
I feel it in my heart.
Well, listen now, you talk about informed decisions, just listen to this. Rick Perry.
I guess let me ask you this. Do you think that it's fair that somebody in Texas doesn't have access to some health insurance, Medicaid, for instance, that somebody in the state of Illinois does? For instance, because Illinois took the Medicaid
money. I think it's fair that people in the state of Texas have access to health care. How that's delivered is the people of the state of Texas want to decide that. And listen, this expansion of Medicaid, this issue that the president came to Texas and lectured us about how we should work our business, in 2009, the president himself said, Medicaid is a broken system, and I agree with him. Putting more people on a broken system is tantamount to putting more people on the Titanic when you know how it's going to end up. That is foolishness. And this president is trying to save his political career when, in fact, he ought to be working to find ways for the American people to actually trust what he has to say about issues, whether it's foreign policy or with Iran, whether it's with health care.
Right.
Let me
ask you very quick,
President.
Broken system?
Yeah, let me
please
say something about it. You know, Texas is an endless source of fun for us. You know, when they've closed every abortion clinic and they've made everything, you know, as inhumanly difficult as possible for women down there. But let me tell you something about Texas. This just infuriated me today. This whole thing about, you know, they always cloak it in the states' rights thing about, you know, well, we don't want what's good for them. We want what's good for us, you know, and done our way. Look, this is what Texas is doing. It's in the Raw store today. This thing infuriated me. There's an article on here. Texas schools, and they have this policy. If you haven't paid, you know, into your school account, your child's school account. Now here, you know, in Mecklenburg, because we've done this before, every once in a while you forget or your kids eat too much, you know, junk or do something and they run out of money, and then the next day you get a note or something from the school saying, hey, your child, you know, you owe $3 to the lunchroom or something.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, sorry, you put money back in their account. Well, down there, if you don't have money in the account,
they'll eat.
Through the line, oh, they don't eat. But it's worse than that. Listen, this school, when the children show up, they don't have money in the account. And the reason this article was in here is the lady was trying to, you know, sue or do something, and they told her, you know, too bad for you, welcome to Texas. But the cafeteria workers, child didn't have 30 cents for the breakfast. They were short, 30 cents. So they took the tray from the child and throw it in the garbage can in front of the face and tell them to go leave. Right?
They took the tray?
They take it away from them and throw it away.
The tray of food?
Yeah. They won't even give them to them.
They throw the food away?
The kid's crying and even had called his mom from the office, and she said, I'm coming now. I'll come up to the school and pay. Just let them eat. I'll be there within, you know, 30, 40 minutes. Nah, too bad. Should have been in there already in the account. Now, this is Texas, sorry. And then they, you know, this caused the public outcry when she reported and everything else, and then they just upheld the board, said that the school did the right thing. They should just take the children's food away if they don't have money in there. Now, if they don't have money, I mean, somebody's got to pay for this. I agree. But guess what? It's not the child's fault. The child is innocent.
Right.
And it infuriates me how Texas treats people. You know, once they're born, you take the food from their hand and throw it in the garbage can if they don't have money in their hand. Right. You know, before that, you know, you do everything, including kill the mom to get the baby born. But,
right.
When the child's already born, who cares? Where's the money, right? This infuriated me because it was humiliating. They said the child was embarrassed and humiliated in front of all the classmates, didn't get to eat, you know, crying in front of the whole school because they take his food away and throw it away because he doesn't have 30 cents. Now, you're talking about traumatizing the child. That's like the worst bullying I've ever heard.
30 cents for 30 cents.
I don't even care.
Throw the food away.
Right. It's not the child's fault. if they need to do something, if they want to punish somebody, you know, tack a fee on there, a late fee or something on the parents, and then they have to pay, you know, a percentage over or whatever. But that's got nothing to do with that child. Let the child eat, and then, you know, go extract an extra buck from the, you know, oh, you owe us a whole dollar now instead of 30 cents from the parent. But don't embarrass the child, and don't take their food from them and throw it in there so you're sitting there hungry all day.
I mean, they took the food and threw it in the garbage rather than take the child's name down and add 30 cents to a bill.
Exactly. And they said that was the right policy, and they've upheld it now. They that's just fine.
Well,
that's the way
this is Rick Perry's this is Rick Perry's life. You see, this is the other thing he said about, and I'm going to get to you, George, and the other person's on there in just a minute. I just want to play this for you.
The real issue of the day is Obamacare. It's the president of the United States who stood up in front of people for literally years and said that if you like your policy, you will be able to keep it. One of the interesting things in that clip that you had on earlier, the president said that he had been working very, very hard moving people into the middle class. I think that's another trust issue that this president has. Unemployment numbers just came out today. Unemployment is up in the United States, and you're seeing the underemployed and those that have just quit looking up to 13.8% now. It's been this president's policies over the course of the last 5 years that have driven people out of the middle class. So the trust issue that you hit on, I think that is the big one for this president. Americans do not trust Barack Obama.
Well, let me ask you, though, about health care. And by the way, though, the jobs numbers were pretty good today. Those are good. We added almost 300,000 jobs that we didn't know we had, 200,000 this month and some revisions.
These numbers are abysmal. When you think that there is approaching 14% of the people that are either underemployed, Obamacare is moving people into the, partially employed line. That is just unacceptable. Our economy should be cranking along. If we would open up the XL pipeline, if we'd put a flat tax into place, if we'd repatriate foreign-made money at a reasonable tax rate, the American economy would take off. Yet this president is so intent on this experimentation with big government that no one trusts Washington to be putting policies into place that allow them the predictability of what's going to happen 6 months or even maybe next month.
Let me ask you this about some statistics in the state of Texas and ask you why you don't think government should, or what you think the government should do to try to fix this, or what you think you should do. In Texas, you rank 50th out of 50 among the number of uninsured residents, and the high school graduation in rate in Texas is 49th out of 50th. So I guess I ask you this is, is that sustainable for the state of Texas? You guys have this great economic boom that's been going on, cover of Time magazine, but these statistics, doesn't at some point that's going to drag Texas down? Do you worry about that?
Number one, the Texas is a conservative state. It is a state that has made the decision internally that they're going to have less of the type of big government programs that Washington, D.C. Fronts. So it is not surprising that there are that number of people who don't have insurance. But the issue is, do they have access to health care? And the answer is absolutely some of the best health care in the world. So the issue there, I think, is Texans have decided, legislature after legislature, this is the program that they're going to put in place. And I don't think Texans want Washington, D.C. saying, you're going to change the way you do your business. No, we're not. And we said that over and over again. Texas is third in graduation rate numbers. I don't know where you get that 50th and 50th.
Well,
this came
from the census, the state educational attainment part of that.
They're wrong. We are wrong. Our graduation numbers are the third highest in the United States. So we're making good progress. Our African-American and Hispanic students are scoring some of the highest with the National Assessment of Education Progress.
Well,
in 2011, we've seen them move up substantially in the last decade. So thousands of people are moving into the state of Texas. They wouldn't be coming there if they were worried about whether or not they're going to have access to health care or whether or not there's going to be a skilled workforce. I think the numbers speak for themselves. people are coming to the state of Texas because there's still a place that freedom reigns, and they want to be a part of that.
Well, if you listen to that moron, he changed it twice. He said he was 30, then he said he was 30th. I mean, you know, he don't know what. This is the same guy. Whoops.
I'm quoting
right.
Your own Department of Education.
Right.
You're 49.
The Texas
said,
Department of Education.
We're
says
third.
It. Right.
He said that's where we're ranked 30.
Right. This economy is not growing. This economy is not growing. He said, what do you mean? Over 300,000, 304,000. Oh, well, that's nothing. Oh, yeah. Let's see. When George Bush was in office, they were losing 850,000 people a month. A month. The stock exchange has gone from 6,000 to almost 16,000.
Right.
Now, like the 14% 13.8. Yeah, the unemployment. That's what he hasn't done. No, that's all in Texas. If it wasn't for Texas, we'd be positive 5. I mean, this man's complete idiot.
Well, again, it's just the
lies.
We don't care.
No, we'll just lie to you. Oh, well, you saw me robbing a bank? You didn't see me robbing that bank. You got pictures of me? Those pictures, do you believe, me or your lying eyes?
No, the guy is quoting
the
fact.
Right, quote the fact.
From
that's right.
And the guy called him a liar.
He
says two different things in the
right.
same sentence.
In the same sentence.
So, I mean, this is the thing, though. They have no shame.
Whoops. That's what he said. Whoops.
But this is the thing about it, though. He's proud of it. What do you say about poverty rates? What do you say about education rates? What are you doing to change that? Well, we voted again and again. We're conservatives.
Remember.
We're proud to have less governance. You hear that? Yeah, we're proud to have less of that big government.
Remember, he was the one that wanted to get rid of the Department
of
Education.
His first act.
That's one of his first acts.
He couldn't remember the other.
And then he couldn't remember it. Right. He couldn't remember it.
Now, let me tell you one other thing he said, though, that bothers me.
Right.
He said about overseas Texas.
Right.
One of the things we can do.
Right.
Now, this is the party that doesn't believe in Texas
right.
at all. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, we should be repatriating some of that money in taxes.
Right.
But every time that Obama has proposed anything like that, or any Democrat, they've been shot down
that's right.
for the last 20 years.
Right. Absolutely.
So, I mean, which way is it? You know, no
taxes. Hello, caller. Who's this?
Lady Tamika.
Lady Tamika, how are you, dear? Can you help? Because I want you to answer. I got Mr. George Gaffney on here. We're going to be talking about Mr. Gaffney.
Yes.
Tell me something about Incognito. You've been in locker rooms before quite a few times. I mean, you've been around guys quite a few times. Tell me, is this something that is normal? I just saw something from Cam Seelan, star defensive he was a tight end with St. Louis, and he said that this guy, Richie Incognito, forget it, is a major. And I want to use the word here, scumbag. That's what he said. He said the former coach for the Baltimore Colts. What was the former coach of Baltimore Colts who's on Sunday Night Football said, we looked at him, and he had a do-not-draft name.
Yeah, Herman Frazier.
Herman Frazier. And there were five other that said the same thing. He was thrown out of two colleges. He's the dirtiest voted the last 2 years. I think 2011, he was voted the dirtiest football player. And last year, he was tied with the dirtiest football player. Now, one of the least average in your locker room? Is there something wrong with this whole team? There must be something wrong with this locker room when it comes from the coach and the coaching staff.
Well, this is why this whole scandal is lasting as long as it has, is because of this. It's because the guys higher up are trying to cover themselves. This guy would have been out the door in 5 minutes, but The other higher-up people are involved. They talked about how the vice president, one of the vice presidents or something, after this guy did, oh, I know what it was. He sexually abused a woman at a golf tournament. Now, this
right.
He was fondling her and doing things. And when she went to report it, one of the vice presidents apologized to her to try to keep her from filing police charges and things like that.
Right.
You know, and yet that's what that thing was. They were emphasizing today. After this, they put this guy on one of the executives put him down as one of the guys to see if you want to make contact with the other players. You want to go through him. You want to have him on, like, your player representative committee. The executives of the team put this nut on that committee that they would talk to in case there was a problem. So they're trying to cover themselves. That's why this is taking so long, and that's why they're dragging this out, because they're trying to figure out how can they get themselves as far away from it as possible. You know, their involvement.
Well, you know, and that's why I want to speak to Lady Tamika about, well, what do you do when you have a problem like this? And you know, it don't have to be exactly in football, but if someone has a problem like this where they're being bullied.
Okay. Well, to go back a little bit with history, bullying has been happening for years. I think adults bully other adults, whether it be in a job setting or whether it's from the teachers, from the principals. And so one of the things that I have been able to do in the school system is to do a Be Cool bullying program for some of the schools. And it actually allows for the kids to take to first identify what it feels like, because folks don't really realize that name-calling is bullying. Now, since the internet is wide open, we have cyberbullying. So if somebody posts a picture and tags something about you, and then that's all cyberbullying. So bullying has changed. It's so broad, and it's so sensitive now. So being able to help the young people to understand that it's self-care that they need to take care of. If anything that feels uncomfortable to you and makes you embarrassed or makes you do things against your will, or you're threatened, or there's any harm done, that is bullying. And so they got to at least use their voice and be able to tell someone that this is happening. You know, no matter how big the threat is, they have to at least allow somebody to know that this is happening and not hold it in as if it's their fault, or try to protect the bully. And most times folks are protecting bullies because they're afraid. But once you start teaching people about self-care, that, you know, I have the right to not be afraid. I have the right to be to enjoy school and be in a comfortable place, or any place that I am. I have the freedom and the right to be out here and live life happy and full. They learn how to take their own power and then go to the proper people to kind of, you know, make sure that they notify them that this is happening. This bullying thing is really out of control these days.
Well, you know, and George, this is what I'm saying. I mean, this guy, he's no little shrimp. I mean, Martin is a big guy. I mean, the thing is that if he felt he had to leave the team because there was no one there for him to go to speak with, this is definitely out of control.
Yeah, it's something. I mean, this Martin has got problems too. He's got some kind of problems beyond this thing, but I mean, he was a perfect victim. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
There's something in his background that makes him the perfect victim. Let's say, like, his parents taught pacifism or something, that you know, or he's trying to be a negotiator, and with nothing to negotiate because he has, you know, he doesn't have the skills or something to defend himself. Something's wrong too, because I mean, it's like he's the perfect victim. It's something wrong when you're the perfect victim. You know,
the other thing,
you shouldn't be victimized. I'm not saying that, but he's like the perfect victim that would.
But the other,
make this drag
but you have
on.
To understand this too. When it's the person that is being bullied, anytime somebody takes away your voice and you feel like you don't have a say, that's bullying. But you know, we just put a title on it. People have been doing this stuff for years. I give you a prime example. Yesterday, I was out at an event yesterday, and clearly there was enough seats for somebody to sit down. Now, this is not bullying, but this person did not activate their voice. The lady said, "Can you scoot over?" Now, mind you, it was seats next to her that she could have sat. The young lady could have sat next to her. the young lady, instead of her telling her, no, you can actually sit next to me, she got upset and left. As opposed to saying, she was already sitting in the seat. But instead of activating her voice and saying, no, I can offer you the seat next to me, she got up and she moved, and then she got upset and then she left. Because she didn't take up for her own self. And you see people doing that all the time. Somebody takes away that person's voice to be able to stand up for themselves, or they think that they don't have enough in them to defend themselves. They kind of let people do stuff like this to them all the time.
Because George and I were talking about this yesterday, and there seems to be something else we don't know that's going on, or that might be going on, and that it seems like that all these guys that were siding with Incognito now, the team now, are hushing up, and they got the football dolphin silence thing going on now. So I think there will be a lot more next couple of days going to make about what is actually going on here. Because, these guys saying, oh, he was such a great guy, and they looked out for him, and they did that, they did this. I mean, now, it just doesn't make much sense to me. I'd like you, Lady Janita, tie up. You got 1 minute and you have to leave. What can you say for
us? Oh, man, I just wanted to say hello, for one thing. Interesting conversation. I think that this is good. But I think that, personally, we all, to some extent, need to, you know, have a voice and not allow other people to shut our voices down, and learn how to honor ourselves. If it's something, you know, a lot of times people put pressure on us to think that we need to be to them a certain type of way, when actually when you're not being what you need to be to you, you're neglecting yourself. You're depriving yourself of the being the best you that you can be. So we need to learn how to take care of ourselves, honor ourselves, love ourselves, so that when those challenges come along, when people are not treating us the way that we know that we should be treated, it'll automatically send an alarm off because we've been treating ourselves the way that we want to be treated. So, you know, we got to take care of ourselves. Nobody's going to take care of us for us.
Sure. So you think there's more going to come out of this?
Well, I mean, just beside anything, there's something that higher-ups gave the okay to this. And they're covering themselves. That's one thing. You know, if it was only privates involved, they'd all be court-martialed.
That's right.
It's code red. It's what's the name?
Red. Colonel Jessup shooting code red, and that's what it. You're absolutely correct.
Red. Coaching the way they talk about it, they talk in generalities. Because it was a code red. It was a few good men.
It was a code red. Okay. Well, I want to thank the guest today. It has been chilling. And we'll see, George. We'll talk about this next week. Oh, and everybody go online and pick up Big Cap and see his interviews. His film critique. BigGaff.com, what is it? George.
BigGaff in the numeral 2, BigGaff2@blogspot.com.
Okay.
Giving out websites over the air, I don't think it works very well, so.
If they kind of look at you, they can. All right, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This has been the last word for this Friday. We had a busy day today. Lady Tamika, good night.
Yes, good night. Have a good one. Enjoy your weekend.
All right. I want to say we have been lucky here.
When the news is all bad, when you're sour and blue, when you start to get mad, you should do what I do. Tell yourself how lucky you are. When the fates are unkind, when your life's going wrong, when you're limping along and get kicked from behind. Tell yourself how lucky you are. Why decry a cloudy sky, an empty purse, a crazy universe? My philosophy is simply things could be worse. So be happy you're here. Think of life as a thrill. And if worse comes to worse, as we all know it will, thank your lucky star you've gotten this far. And tell yourself how lucky you are. How lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky, how lucky you are.